Good morning, one and all. You are listening to WHFR Dearborn, featuring local and independent artists, listener-supported, non-commercial radio, 10 o'clock, Tuesday. You know what that means, don't you? Of course you do. That means it's time for another fun-filled, action-packed, thrill-a-minute installment of Radio Vault. So let us go over the menu while I have a second with you. We're going to kick it off momentarily with a whole hour of the series called A Date with Judy. A Date with Judy starred someone by the name of Louise Erickson, who is a regular attendee at our Friends of Old Time Radio Convention in New Jersey many times, or at least a few times, and we recreated this series in front of fans. How about that? Well, we're going to hear some of the original shows from 1944. Too Many Dates. And another, an episode from the same year, 1944, Horse Racing. After that, we're going to take a listen to one of our tried and true features on Radio Vault. That is the Jack Benny Show. From there, we're going to go into a comedy quiz show called Can You Top This? And then finally, we've been featuring Lux Radio Theater from time to time recently. We have got The Life of Riley from the Lux Radio Theater. Now, we played a couple weeks ago the Sorry Wrong Number Lux Radio Theater. This is where a radio show went to film and then back to radio. This is another example of that. The Lux Radio Theater of 1950 took a radio show, The Life of Riley with William Bendix. They turned that into a movie, and then they made a radio show out of the movie. And this time it's with the original star on all three versions, William Bendix. That'll be during our third hour of today's Radio Vault. We have got an exciting week ahead of you, ahead of us, and you too, I hope. Here at WHFR, we'll tell you more about that as we go along. But right now, we're going to go back to September 12, 1944. Louise Erickson. And a cast of, maybe a dozen people. For the AFRS version of The Life, or A Date with Judy. And what does the AFRS version mean? What does that mean? That means it was distributed by the Armed Forces Radio Service. Some of the shows heard in the U.S. were also heard by our troops overseas. So we're going to hear one of those. The only difference between that and the domestic version is what? No commercials. So let's listen now to A Date with Judy.
A Date with Judy, starring Louise Erickson as Judy and John Brown as father.
Hello?
Hello, Judy, this is Oogie, and I'm at odds with the world, the entire world.
Well, for goodness sakes, Oogie, what's the matter?
Judy, if you cast me aside like an old shoe, I'll understand.
What's happened?
I'm tuxedo-less.
Oh, Oogie.
And why would a woman like you go to a formal dance with a man like me when he's going to have to be dressed informally?
Oogie Pringle, do you think I'm that kind of woman? Why, as long as you yourself are in whatever clothes you have on, I'm perfectly happy. I'll be indeed proud to be with you.
Oh, Judy, you're the most wonderful woman in the entire world.
Oh, thank you, Oogie. And besides, with a few safety pins, my father's tuxedo will look beautiful on you.
That's Judy, folks. Judy Foster, the lovable teenage girl who is close to all our hearts. And now let's drop in on the Fosters. It's just after dinner, and Judy, Father, and Randolph are in the living room, and Judy wants to know...
What time is it, Father?
Judy, dear, you are my favorite daughter. I'm extremely fond of you. But this is the third time you've asked me what time it was in the last 5 minutes.
I'm sorry, Father.
It's all right, dear.
Father.
Yes, Judy.
Father, would you please reconsider and let Oogie borrow your tuxedo?
Absolutely not. Can you give me one good reason why Oogie can't wear his own father's tuxedo?
Yes, I can, Father.
What is it?
His father won't let him.
Oh.
Father, you didn't tell me what time it is.
Oh.
Father.
Yes, Randolph.
Why don't you let Judy wear your watch, and then you can ask her the time?
Look, can't you youngsters find something to do? Why don't you go to a movie?
I can't.
I'll pay. It'll be worth it.
Well, thanks, Father, but I can't.
Why not?
Well, I think Oogie might drop over.
Oogie?
I can't think of a better reason for going to the movies.
Randolph.
What do you mean he might drop over? Don't you know?
No, Father.
Well, do you have a date with him or don't you?
Well, not exactly.
Not exactly? What does that mean?
Well, Father, we have a sort of a... Well, I mean... Well, it's sort of understood that Oogie will drop over, even though it isn't a formal date. I guess you could call it a standing date.
You mean to say that you have that steady an arrangement with Oogie?
Oh, it isn't an arrangement, Father. That is, we never decided it'd be like that. It just sort of happened.
Oh, I see. Just happened, huh? What if another boy just happens to call you for a date? What happens to your standing date with Oogie?
It takes a seat. A back seat.
Well, what about it, Judy?
Well, oh, I'll get it. Excuse me, Father. Hello? Oh, hello, Ted. Oh, fine, thank you. Tonight? Oh, I'm sorry I'm busy tonight. That's right, Oogie. Tomorrow? Well, Oogie... Uh-huh. Wednesday? Oh, I'm sorry, Ted, but... Yes, Oogie. Saturday? Well, I think Oogie's... Oh, thanks for calling, Ted. Call me real soon. I just love to see you. Goodbye. That was Ted. Such a nice boy.
Yeah. Judy, I...
Oh, well, that's probably Mr. Standing Date himself.
Come in.
Hiya, folks.
Well, good evening, Oogie.
Hello, Mr. Foster.
Hi, Oogie.
Hi, Randolph. Hello, Judy.
Hello, Oogie. Will you excuse me? I'll go up and get my coat.
Oh, but of course, Judy. Goodbye for a minute.
Goodbye.
Oogie, tell me something. Do you know any other girls beside Judy?
Oh, sure. A few.
Well, how is it you never visit any of them?
What? Well, why should I do that?
Well, I just thought... Look, you're a nice boy, Oogie, and there must be lots of nice girls that you know who'd be very pleased if you were to visit them.
Oh, sure. I guess so.
So why don't you visit them and make all those people happy?
You mean make the girls happy?
Not only the girls, Oogie.
Oh, I couldn't do that.
Oh, sure you could.
But I couldn't.
You couldn't?
You're giving up too easily, Father.
Well, of course I couldn't. What about Judy?
Judy, yes. Well, she'd have to make that sacrifice for all those other girls.
Oh, I couldn't ask her to do that. It wouldn't be fair.
To whom? The other girls?
No, to Judy. Why, we... Well, everybody knows that Judy and I are... Well, we have a sort of... it just wouldn't be fair. Well, how would I feel if Judy saw other boys?
Yes, but Oogie, that's exactly...
Mr. Foster, I don't think you understand. Judy and I go together like you've... Like Anthony and Cleopatra. Or like ham and eggs. Or bread and butter. Or, gee, I'm hungry.
I don't like it, Dora.
Put out the light, dear.
I don't like it, I tell you.
Please, Melvin, it's late.
You might show a little interest, Dora. After all, Judy's your daughter, too.
Interested, dear, but I don't see what you're getting all worked up about.
Oh, you don't see. Well, if you don't think it's serious when your 16-year-old daughter sees only one boy...
Well, what's
then...
serious about it? They've known each other since they were children. They like each other and enjoy each other's company. That's all there is to it.
But, Dora, what if she should marry him?
Oh, Melvin, stop worrying. Judy isn't going to marry anybody for years. And when she does, well, she could do a lot worse than Ogie.
I doubt it.
I think he's pretty cute.
Oh, Dora. Why, he's only 17 and a half. How's he going to support a wife? His father isn't going to give him an allowance all his life. And even if he does, how are they going to live on $1.50 a week?
Well, he won't always be 17 and a half, dear, and he'll find something to earn a living. They won't have to live on the $1.50 his father gives him.
Yeah, well, if he thinks he's going to marry my daughter and use that to blackmail money, Dora.
What, dear?
I just thought of something. Something horrible.
What, Melvin?
If Judy marries Ogie, do you realize that he'll be the father of my grandchildren? Of course. How can you lie there calmly in the face of that gruesome fact?
Put out the light, dear, and come to bed. And don't worry about it. They're both very young.
Imagine that boy, the father of my grandchildren. I got to talk to Judy. I've got to talk to
Melvin.
Her. Yes, Dora.
I think you can safely put it off until the morning.
But, Father, what have you got against Ogie?
Nothing, dear. Ogie's all right, but that's not the point. Look, Judy, someday you'll be getting married.
Of course, Father.
Now, there's no rush about it, you know. You're very young. But someday when you're old enough, see, a boy will come along, and you'll fall in love, and you'll marry.
Yes, Father.
Well, you know, Judy, marriage can be the most beautiful thing in the world. But it can also be... Well, you see, it depends mainly on whom you marry. You've got to live with that person a long time. A very long time.
Father.
Yes, dear?
What has all that got to do with Ogie?
Well, everything. Don't you see, a person's got to have some basis for choosing a partner in life. There's got to be some basis for comparison. Now, if you only see Ogie, you're not going to meet no other boy. And so, when the time comes for you to choose a husband, how are you going to know what qualities to look for?
Well, I can always compare him with Ogie.
No. Now, look, you've got to do something for me. I want you to stop seeing Ogie exclusively. It isn't fair to either of you. I want you to have dates with other boys, too.
You mean sort of scatter bits of myself with other men besides Ogie?
Well, that isn't exactly what I mean. But it'll do for a starter.
No.
But, Ogie, this is the way it was meant to be. If I don't see other fellas, how am I going to know him when he comes along?
Him? Who's him?
The man I'm going to marry.
Judy, you're too young to get married, and your father has no right to be putting the idea into your head. Just because I'm not able at the moment to financially finance a wife is no reason for him to want to put me out of your life.
But, Ogie, he didn't say I couldn't see you.
Well, I'll be able to take care of you in an extremely luxurious manner in just 10 years. I don't see why your father can't be patient for only 10 measly years.
Oh, Ogie, you frighten me. You look 10 years older right this minute.
Well, I'm pretty mad, I am. I'm going to talk to your father right now. This is a crisis, and when a man meets a crisis, well, he meets it, that's all. Mr. Foster, I want to talk to you man to man.
Yes, certainly, Ogie. Sit down.
I don't want to sit down. I want to know what you've got against me.
Against you? Well, nothing, son. Nothing at all.
Well, why did you tell Judy to see other boys instead of me?
Well, you see...
Why did you do it, sir? Why?
Now, look, Ogie, I think you're a fine boy, but... Well, you see, Judy's a young girl, and you're a very young boy.
I beg to differ with you. I'm 17 and a half.
Well, 17 and a half is very young, you know.
Well, I won't be 17 and a half forever.
No, that's true, but...
Mr. Foster... Do you realize I got 6 straight A's in history last year?
You did? Well...
And are you aware of the fact that women like Rita Hayworth and Lana Turner mean nothing to me?
Well, I...
And it might interest you to know I've got quite a lot of bonds put away.
Well, that's fine, Ogie, but
I... And I think you didn't do a very nice thing when you told Judy not to see
me. Ogie, I did not tell Judy not to see you. I just told her she ought to see other boys, too.
Mr. Foster, all I ask is 10 years. Just 10 measly 10 years.
What happens in 10 years?
I'll have my mother's permission to marry Judy.
Well, you won't have mine.
Very well. Very well, if that's the way you feel, I'll step out of Judy's life completely.
Oh, now, Oogie, wait a minute. I wouldn't hurt your feelings for anything in the world. You're a fine boy, but...
Flattery will get you nowhere, Mr. Foster.
Look, Oogie, I wouldn't interfere with you kids, but don't you see, it's my duty as a father.
Mr. Foster, sir, you wait and see. You'll find that boys like me don't grow on trees.
I know they don't, Oogie.
Mr. Foster, sir... I have one more thing to say before taking my departure.
What, Oogie?
I'm glad that this divorce occurred before our marriage rather than after it.
What?
I'm convinced that you and I could not live together happily under the same roof.
Oh, for the love of heaven.
Back to A Date with Judy.
Father, Father.
Yes, Judy?
You'll be glad to know I've got a date with a new boy tonight.
Oh, really? Well, that's fine.
I wonder what Oogie's doing tonight.
Randolph, I told you I didn't want that name mentioned in this house. So, a new boy's visiting you tonight, huh? Well, I'm looking forward to meeting him.
Is he nice, Judy?
I don't know, Mother. I just met him. I guess he is.
Of course he is.
Father.
Yes?
Father, would you do me a favor?
Anything your little heart desires.
Would you mind putting on a tie and jacket?
Well, I... What? A tie and jacket? What for? I'm not going anywhere.
But I'm having a visitor.
Well, in that case, you ought to wear the tie and jacket.
And that goes for you too, Randolph.
When will I learn to keep my big face shut?
Father, you do want to make a good impression, don't you?
What do I want to impress him with? The fact that I own a suit?
Mother!
Judy's perfectly right, Melvin.
Well, I don't see why I should have to. I never had to dress up when Oogie... I'll be very glad to.
Thank you, Father. Randolph!
Yeah, I'll change after I see what he's got on.
Randolph, really? Oh, that must be Orville. This is a new era in my life, imagine. Now, everybody be charming. Hello, Orville.
Hiya, doll. What's cooking?
Oh, brother.
I'd like you to know my mother. Mother, this is Orville.
I'm so glad to know you.
Hiya, Mom. How's the old girl?
Mom?
And this is my brother, Randolph.
Give me five, kid.
Will I get them back?
Hey, the kid's pretty sharp.
Thanks.
Oh, here's Father.
Well, I take it this is Orville.
You take it reach, Mac. Hiya, Pop.
What?
Get a load of that tie, will you? Must be plenty of life in the old boy yet. What do you say, Pop?
Old boy? Pop! Oh, look here.
Make yourselves at home, folks. You might as well get to know me, because you're going to be seeing a lot of me.
Want to bet?
Elmer, you know my mother and my father and my brother Randolph. This is Elmer.
Well,
hello, how do you
nice
do,
to
Elmer?
See you.
Hello.
Say, I remember you, Elmer. Mitzi brought you over one night.
Yes.
Well, you see, Judy, Elmer's got the right idea. He doesn't go with Mitzi exclusively.
I don't go with Mitzi at all anymore.
Oh, you don't?
No.
You see, Father, Elmer's mother broke it up.
She did? Why?
Well, you see, when I went out with Mitzi, she always promised my mother to get me home at a reasonable hour.
Well, what happened?
She didn't.
She didn't what?
Get me home at a reasonable hour.
Oh. Nice day, wasn't it?
Yes. Yes.
Elmer's going to college in the fall.
Yes.
Is that so? What are you going to study, Elmer?
Yes, sir.
Huh? I said, what are you going to study?
Probably oratory.
Where do you live, Elmer?
Live? Oh, on State Street.
Oh.
Would you like to hear some music, Elmer?
No, thanks.
Oh.
I'd just rather sit around and talk.
Judy, are you expecting Orville tonight?
No, Father.
Elmer?
No, Father.
Well, what about Monroe or Jojo or Stinky Edwards?
No, dear family. Tonight I'm quite dateless.
Huh. Well, that's too bad.
You don't sound convincing, Father.
Well, to be perfectly frank with all of you, I'm beginning to think I may have been a little too hasty when I...
Yes, Father, go on. When you...
Well, I may as well admit it. I guess boys like Oogie don't grow on trees.
No, they only swing on them.
Don't joke about it, Randolph. Oogie's... Well, he's all right.
It was fun being with him.
I always liked Oogie.
I don't mind telling you, I wouldn't mind seeing him around here Oh, I'll get it. Hello?
Hello, Mr. Foster. This is Oogie.
Oogie, well, how are you, my boy?
Huh?
It's good to hear your voice again, my boy.
Oh, thank you. It's good to hear yours, too.
Well, thanks. I suppose you want to talk to Judy, huh? Here she is. Hurry, Judy. Don't keep Oogie waiting.
Hello, Oogie.
Hello, Judy. I'd like to ask you something, Judy.
What is it, Oogie?
Can you tell me Tootsie Whiteman's phone number?
What? Tootsie Whiteman?
Huh?
Elm 749.
Elm 749. Thanks, Judy. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Well, what'd he say?
Tootsie Whiteman. He wanted her phone number.
Tootsie Whiteman?
Well, I guess it was just a matter of time till she trapped him.
I'll die. That's what I'll do. I'll just die.
Oh, no, honey.
It's all your fault, Father.
My fault?
Yes, you chased him out of our house.
And right into Tootsie Wyman's house.
You did, Father. You did.
But, Judy, I...
You made my life an empty shell. An absolutely empty shell.
You to do, Randolph. Make it your business to run into Oogie, casual-like, of course, and hint to him, casual-like, that if he should feel like dropping over any time, he'd find he was very welcome.
Oh, the things I do for my family. Oh, hi, Oogie.
Hi, Randolph.
Say, Oogie, why don't you drop over to the house some night, casual-like? Tonight, for instance, casual-like?
Well...
My father is very anxious to see you.
Your father?
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, Randolph. Remember when your father told me there was a lot of nice girls in town who'd be glad to have me visit with them?
I remember.
Well, he was right.
He was?
Yes, sir. Why, the women in this town are absolutely mad about me. Mad, mad, mad.
Yikes.
You tell your father he did me a big favor. I'm having a ball.
And he said you were right, Father, and that you did him a big favor.
Oh, Randolph, is that what he said?
That's what the man said.
Mother won't speak to me. Sister won't speak to me. Nobody will speak to me.
I'll speak to you, Father.
Thank you, Randolph. Oh, you don't know what it is to be the father of a daughter.
Can't say that I do, Father.
I've got to get Oogie back. Judy's heart is broken. She can go steady with Oogie. If it'll make Judy happy, I'll go steady with Oogie.
We'll all go steady with Oogie.
But how to get him back?
Well, we could tell him she's got the vapors.
No. I've got to think of something. When this family isn't happy, life isn't worth living. All I care about is my family.
Father, while you're in this mood, could I have a dollar?
Randolph, please don't disturb. I'm very busy. I've got to think.
Gee, I never thought the day would come when we'd have to devise a trap to get Oogie into this house.
Randolph, what's Oogie's telephone number?
Elm 427.
Elm 427. Randolph, I've got it. I think.
You mean you've discovered the way to Oogie's heart?
My boy, I think I have. I really think I have.
Hello?
Oh, Oogie, this is Mr. Foster.
Oh, hello, sir.
Oogie, my boy, how are you?
Delightful, just delightful.
That's nice. You know, it just occurred to me that we haven't seen anything of you for a long time.
How time flies.
That's very good. Yeah. Now, that's right, Oogie. You are so right. Oogie, I want to ask you a very personal question.
Yes, Mr. Foster?
Have you missed seeing us?
Well, Mr. Foster, I'll give you a very personal answer. I haven't had time to. I have had so many social obligations since our last meeting that it's all I can do to be on time for my various appointments.
I see.
However, I do think of you all at fleeting moments. Fondly, I assure you, Mr. Foster. And I wonder how you all are.
Yes, well, that's very nice of you, Oogie. Oogie, another thought occurred to me. I was looking through my closet a little while ago, looking for a lost golf ball, I think it was. I happened to run across my tuxedo. You know something, Oogie? I never before realized what a good-looking tuxedo I have.
I'm glad for you, Mr. Foster.
Yes, well, then another thought occurred to me. I vaguely remembered Judy mentioning that you wanted a tuxedo. It sort of came back to me. You know, she just mentioned it once passing through the room, and I said to myself, I said, my goodness, here is this beautiful midnight blue tuxedo hanging in the closet, and Oogie, that fine boy, could be using it.
Do you really mean it?
Indeed I do.
Oh, Mr. Foster, you are a prince among men.
Oh, it's nothing, Oogie.
Oh, Mr. Foster, I'll guard it with my very life. Nothing will befall it.
Glad to let you have it, Oogie.
I shall be in your debt eternally.
Yes, well, what time will you come and get it, Oogie?
Could I come tonight, sir?
Well, let me see. I don't think I have anything on for tonight. Be here at 8:30.
I'll be there, sir. Goodbye.
Goodbye, my boy. Randolph, I don't know why I never thought of that before. There's no reason why Oogie shouldn't be using my tuxedo.
Well, of course not. You'll look just adorable in it.
Well, what are you all looking so glum about? I bought some ice cream and cake. Let's have a party.
No, thank you, Father. I don't want any. I shall probably never eat again.
Oh, no. Judy, it never hurts to celebrate. If what you're celebrating happens, well, you're that much ahead. And if it doesn't happen, at least you've had the celebration.
Father, how can you be so cheerful at a time like this? When your only daughter's life is shattered to bits at her feet?
Yes, Melvin, how can you be so tactless?
What I'm wondering about, Father, is how you can be so extravagant.
Oh, the doorbell. I wonder who that can be.
Oh, I'll get it.
Randolph, you stay away from that door. Judy, dear, would you mind seeing who's at the door?
All right, Father. I'll do as you bid me do. Oogie!
Well, here I am, folks.
Oogie, come right in, son.
Sit down, Oogie.
Sit here in my chair, son. It's more comfortable.
Father, let's have a party. Isn't it a lucky coincidence that you bought ice cream and cake?
Yes, isn't it?
Oh, I can't stay. I just stopped in for a minute.
Oh, nonsense, my boy. Well, it's good to see you. Good to see you.
Well, it's good to see you, too. You look beautiful.
I do?
Oh, no, not you, Mr. Foster. Judy.
Oh.
Oogie, you're just as gallant as ever.
Judy, I've got a confession to make. When I came over here tonight, it was for one reason and one reason only.
What do you mean, Oogie?
No, Mr. Foster, I want to tell the truth. Judy, I came for your father's tuxedo.
What?
But the minute I saw you, I knew I didn't care about your father's tuxedo. Except I would like to borrow it next Tuesday night, Mr. Foster, so I can take Judy to that very formal dance. I knew I came over just to see you, Judy.
Oh, Oogie, you say the most beautiful things. Go on.
What flavor ice cream did your father get? Yep, here we are.
Wasn't it a beautiful dance, Oogie?
Yeah, it was snazzy. And Judy, you were the most beautiful woman there.
Thank you, Oogie. You were the most... Well, you had more tuxedo on than anyone else there.
Yeah, it does fit a little bit big.
Well, I guess I'd better go in now.
Yeah, I guess it's pretty late.
Oogie, I've been thinking... Maybe Father was right about our seeing so much of each other.
Judy, you know what you're saying?
Well, really, Oogie, after all, Father is a grown-up man, and grown-ups are frequently very right about things. We shouldn't see so much of each other. Tell you what we'll do.
Or what?
Well, you were going to be at my house tomorrow night at 8, weren't you?
Yes.
Well, under the circumstances, hold up your arrival until 8:15.
Dave and Judy is written by Aline Leslie and stars Louise Erickson as Judy and John Brown as father, with Tommy Cook as Randolph and Myra Marsh as mother. Oogie was played by Scott Elliott. Elmer and Orville by Sidney Miller and Irving Lee. Original music was composed by Paul Sartell and conducted by Konstantin Bakalinikov. The program was produced and directed by Helen Mack.
A Date with Judy has come to you through the worldwide facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service, the voice of information and education.
What did the Armed Forces do when it was time for a commercial? They played music that works just perfect for us here on Radio Vault. On WHFR.
I think you need a reset. Time to reflect on the week you've had and prepare for the rest of the week to come. A few hours to tune out and focus on calming the soul. If that sounds like your jam, tune in to Midweek Midnights every Wednesday from 10 p.m. to 12 a.m. right here on WHFR Radio. Join me, your host, Radio K, in showcasing both new and old shoegaze, indie alternative, and dreamy ambient space music that takes over the airwaves, ready to drift you into your happy place. So tune in this Wednesday and hop on the Midweek Midnight Spaceship. You won't want to miss your ride.
Get in, loser. We're going shopping.
Date with Judy, starring Louise Erickson as Judy and John Brown as father.
Hello?
Oh, hello, Judy.
Father, how are you?
Fine, dear.
It's so funny that you should call. I was just thinking of you.
Well, isn't that nice?
And would you like to know what I was thinking? I was thinking that of all the fathers in the world, you were by far the most adorable and becoming.
Adorable? Becoming?
Yes. And would you like to know why I think so? I'll tell you why. Missy and I saw a dress today, and do you know that as soon as I laid eyes on that dress, I realized how adorable and becoming you were?
That's Judy, folks. Judy Foster, the lovable teenage girl who is close to all our hearts. And now let's drop in at the Foster home. It's a Saturday afternoon, and Judy and her mother are worried about Father.
Mother, I think you're utterly right. Father is working too hard.
Well, I've spoken to him about it, but he keeps telling me that he can't run a business by the clock.
Well, it's just terrible. Here it is, late Saturday afternoon, and he isn't home yet.
Oh, poor dear. He was meeting Mr. Emerson. He said they had some important decisions to make this afternoon.
Well, Foster, what do you think?
I don't know, Emerson. It's a hard decision to make.
Yeah, but we've got to make one, and quick, too.
Yeah, I guess so. Let me look at the figures again.
Here.
Well, I'll tell you what I think.
What, Foster? What?
$2 to win on Happy Lad in the sixth. Happy Lad, what a horse. He should be pulling an ice wagon.
An ice wagon is too good for him.
Well, we did it again.
Yes, sir, six in a row. All losers.
Now I know why they call it the sport of kings. You got to be a king to be able to afford it.
You're not kidding, Foster.
You've also got to be a king-sized dope to keep on doing it.
I guess so, but... Oh, well, it's fun.
Fun? You call this fun? Losing six races in a row?
Well, yeah, but look at the kick you get when you win.
Huh, when you win? That's a laugh. You can't win it. You never come out ahead betting.
Well,
betting is a trap, Emerson. They dangle some easy money in front of your nose, but you never get it, Ellen. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, sirree. It's the shortest route to the poorhouse.
Yeah, I guess you're right, Foster.
I know I'm right. Who do you like in the seventh?
Hi, Randolph.
Hi.
Hello, Mother.
Hello, dear.
Father home yet?
Not yet, Judy.
Oh, poor Father. Spending all of Saturday afternoon with Mr. Emerson making difficult decisions.
I just hope they made a few correct decisions.
Well, why only a few? Why not all?
Let's not be greedy, Judy. Take my word for it. They'll be lucky if they make only a few correct ones.
Well, I must say, you might have more faith in Father's business ability. I must say that... Oh, here's Father. Hello, dear Father, dear.
Hi, Father.
Hello.
Oh. You poor dear. Sit right down here and rest.
That's a good idea.
Melvin, what happened to your voice, dear?
I guess I must have done some shouting.
Shouting? What is there to shout about in a business discussion? Well, it depends upon the kind of business you're discussing.
What?
Well, in some businesses, when you make a decision, you feel like encouraging that decision, so you shout.
Randolph.
Did Mr. Emerson shout, too?
Oh, you should have heard him.
I don't think I understand, dear.
It's just as well, never mind.
Melvin, I think you should stop working so hard.
What?
Mother and I discussed it, Father. We both agree.
And spending Saturday afternoons at it is carrying it too far, dear. Well, especially when you choose the wrong...
Randolph!
The wrong decisions, Father.
Oh, yeah. Well,
As a matter of fact, I just about decided that myself.
You did, Father?
Uh-huh.
Well, I'm glad, dear. After all, it isn't worth the extra money you might make by working Saturday afternoon.
What extra money?
You're perfectly right.
Yes.
And I'll tell you something else I found out. You never make that extra money. Hmm? You try to do it the quick and easy way, but it doesn't work.
You're lucky if you break even, huh, Father?
Please, Randall.
You know, I experienced a fascinating experience this afternoon.
What, dear?
Father, remember that adorable dress I told you about on the phone?
Yes, Judy.
Well, this is very interesting. Missy said it'd cost about $18, and I said it'd be closer to $25. We argued for a while, and finally I bet her a dime I was right. So
you
we went...
You what?
We bet a dime, Father. Well, it's
Judy,
so
that was a terrible thing you did.
No, it wasn't, Father. I won.
That doesn't matter. In fact, it's worse.
But why? I don't understand. Mitzi wasn't angry or anything.
You bet, Judy. You bet.
I know, Father.
There's no excuse, Judy.
Oh, Melvin, I don't think Judy did anything so terrible by betting a dime.
Dora, what are you saying? How can you stand there and encourage your own daughter to continue a habit as evil as betting?
What? Foster, I am not encouraging Judy to bet. I merely said...
That is beside the point, Dora.
But, Father, I only bet a dime.
The tenth part of a dollar.
It isn't the amount. It's the principle. Even betting a penny is bad. Can't you see? It's a trap.
It is, Father?
Absolutely. Easy money is dangled in front of your nose. You win a dime. You didn't have to work for it. It's wonderful. So, next time you bet 50 cents, a dollar, $10, $100.
All that, Father, on Judy's allowance of $2 a week?
Judy, all bettors end up broke in the poorhouse.
But, Melvin, you bet sometimes.
I used to, but I gave it up.
When? This afternoon?
Yeah, Randolph. I admit it, I used to bet. And that's how I know. You can't win.
Boy, you must have made some pretty bad decisions today.
Never mind that. That has nothing to do with it, Randolph. Judy, do you believe what I'm telling you?
I guess so, Father. I'll give Mitzi back her dime.
But you don't really believe it, do you, Judy?
Well, I don't
think All right, Judy, I'll prove it to you. I guess a person can never learn from somebody else's experience. You've got to find out for yourself.
Well, how am I going to find out for myself, Father? I don't think Mitzi will want to bet with me.
Yeah, well, this is what we'll do, Judy. I'm going to give you 4 weeks' allowance in advance. $8.
Really?
Now, don't get excited, Judy. I'll bet there's a catch in it somewheres.
Yes, there is. Now, next Saturday, we'll go to Sportsman's Park. I think they have horse racing there.
Why, Father, whatever makes you think so?
Never mind. They run 8 races a day, the man said. And, you will select one horse in each race, and you'll bet a dollar on the horse.
A dollar? A whole dollar?
Yes, a whole dollar.
Well, I thought $2 is the smallest bet they take, Father.
That's true, but Judy isn't going to bet at the mutual window. She's going to bet against me. You see, I'll cover her bet.
I don't want to bet against you, Father.
Why not?
Well, I would rather not.
I think, Father, that she has her doubts about getting paid off if she wins.
Is that true, Judy?
Well, no, Father.
Hey, see, Randolph, you were wrong.
But will I, Father?
Don't worry, Judy. You have my word that I'll pay you if you win.
At the prevailing odds, Father.
What?
Is that good for me, Randolph? What does it mean?
Well, say the odds are 5-1. You win $5 for every dollar you bet, and so on.
Is that true, Father?
Yes, it's true.
Jeepers, that's wonderful.
There you see. You're in the trap. You smell easy money. Well, that's fine.
Well, Melvin, I'm opposed to the whole thing. I don't think it's right for Judy to go to the racetrack and bet on horses.
Oh, I agree with you, Dora. It isn't right for Judy to go to the track and bet on horses. And she won't go again. But I feel that it's worth it for her to go this once to learn about the evils of betting from personal experience. If she learns that lesson, more good than harm will come.
Well, all right, but I'm going too.
Well, I think I ought to go too, so that I can learn from Judy's experience.
All right, we'll all go. Won't do any of us any harm to learn that you never get anywhere by trying to get there the easy way. Next Saturday afternoon, we're all going to Sportsman's Park. Well, here are our seats, Dora. Not bad, either, huh?
I don't know why, but I'm very excited.
What do I do now, Father?
Well, now you decide what horse you want to bet.
Oh, I see. Father, how do I decide?
Well, that, Judy, is a problem that's been troubling horse players for many years.
And Father is the last person in the world I would ask if I were you, Judy.
Never mind that, Randy. Now, here, Judy, here's the program which lists all the horses in each race. And here's the racing form.
What's that?
Well, it's a sort of a paper, they tell me, which gives you the record of every horse in each race. What races he ran in, how he did, and so on. Here.
Isn't this interesting?
Uh-huh.
I don't understand it.
Well, that's just as well.
Do you want me to try to explain it to you, dear?
No, thank you, Father. I don't think it'd help.
It takes most people several years to find that out.
What horse are you going to bet on, Judy?
I don't know yet, Mother. I'm studying the program. Let's see. Double Cedar, Brave Sailor, Sandy Jack, Sweet Lady. Sweet Lady. Father, I pick Sweet Lady.
Sweet Lady? Why?
Because it's such a lovely name. Don't you think so, Mother?
Sweet Lady. It is, Judy. It's lovely.
You're picking Sweet Lady just because you like the name?
Well, can you think of a better way, Father?
Sweet Lady, huh? All right, let's see. Let me see now. You're sure that's the horse you want, Judy?
Yes, Father.
All right. Now I'll show you that that horse can't possibly win. Here's her record. Ran 8 races this season. Hasn't won one. Now, in her last race, she ran 6 furlongs in 1 minute, 11 4/5 seconds. And there are at least 5 other horses in this race who have done better time than that. See what I mean, Judy?
Yes, Father. But it's such a lovely name. I definitely want to bet on Sweet Lady.
All right. But you'll be sorry.
Thank you. back to A Date with Judy.
Now remember, Judy, you're betting a dollar on Sweet Lady.
At 15 to 1.
Might as well be 100 to 1.
Come on, Sweet Lady.
Oh, save your breath, Judy. Your horse is last, Judy.
Run, Sweet Lady, please.
Faster, Sweet Lady, faster.
He isn't even mentioning Sweet Lady.
Please, Sweet Lady, please.
Sweet Lady, oh, Sweet Lady.
I wonder whether Sweet Lady is still in the race.
Oh, please, come on, Sweet Lady, come on.
No, it's Sweet Lady.
What?
Well, Father, you're so pale.
Here they come into the stretch. It's double-seater by half a length. Sandy Jack by a length. And look at that Sweet Lady.
Come on, Sweet Lady.
You horse.
Sweet Lady, they come into the finish. And it's double-seater. And no, it's Sweet Lady. The winner there, no.
Did you see her, Ron Melvin? Did you see her?
I saw her.
You owe me a fortune, Father. I won.
Yes, you won. You won. But there are seven more races.
I know. Isn't it wonderful? Father, tell me something.
What, Judy?
How long has this been going on?
Well, Judy, who do you like? I mean, what horse are you betting on in the second race?
I don't know. I can't seem to make up my mind.
What's the matter? Don't any of the horses have lovely names?
No, Father. I don't feel attracted to any of them. Can we look at the horses?
Well, certainly, if you think that'll help decide you. Come with me. Well, here they are. See, the jockeys always ride them around in the circle before the race. That's to warm them up.
Oh, I see.
Boston, you old so-and-so.
Uh-oh. Hello, Emerson.
Hello, Mr. Emerson.
Why, Judy, hello. Say, Foster, I thought you said you were through betting.
I am.
Well, then what are you here for, the sunshine?
I'm here to teach Judy you can't make money the easy way. She's betting.
No kidding.
That's right, Mr. Emerson. Father gave me 4 weeks' allowance in advance, and I'm betting him a dollar a race.
What? Why, Foster, you ought to be ashamed of yourself stealing the kid's allowance.
Now, wait a minute. That's not...
Well,
I only...
Father isn't doing that. I won from him.
You did? That's a hot one. Who picked Sweet Lady for you?
I did it myself.
What?
She liked the horse's name.
No kidding. Who do you like in this race, Judy?
Well, I think that one. Number four.
Number four? Let me see. Oh, that's Slowfoot.
Slowfoot? Why, Judy?
Well, the color of the horse matches the jockey's eyes.
What?
That's the way she picks them, Emerson.
Well, let's see. Slowfoot, huh? Well, let's see what the experts say. The tipster says here, quote, if this horse doesn't have an inferiority complex yet, this race will give it to him, unquote. let's see. Oh, Charlie the Tout says, quote, put a saddle on me and I can beat him myself.
You hear that, Judy? He hasn't got a chance.
I have made my decision and nothing will deter me.
Okay, but you'll be sorry.
Jordan is out of the running back, coming down the stretch. It's front page, glory song, slow foot.
Hurry, and come on, come
on. And on front page, slow foot and glory song. It's slow foot and front page. And it's slow foot by a hip.
Oh,
what?
No. Yes, I know.
Oh, Father, I'm so grateful for everything you're teaching me.
Oh. I tell you, Emerson, it's uncanny. Six races and she's won every one of them.
I can't understand it. It defies all the laws.
She picked by a hair in the third because she felt sorry for it, so few people were betting on it. And in the fourth, she picked Spookship because she likes mystery stories. In the fifth, Saranac because he reminded her of Glenn Ford. And Hideaway in the sixth because, get this, Emerson, because it has long eyelashes.
Oh, incredible. But it's pure coincidence, Foster. Couldn't happen again in a million years.
Yeah, maybe not. But I owe her a fortune. There are only two races left. There's only one thing to do. I've got to win some money in the next two races.
I thought you weren't going to bet anymore.
Well, what else can I do? I don't want to pay her out of my own pocket.
Yeah, well, who do you like in the seventh?
Well, let's see. What about Hot Toddy?
Hot Toddy? Why?
Well, it's such a cute name for a horse.
Foster, do you mean to tell me that an old horse player like yourself is going to pick a horse because it's got a cute name?
Well, it works for Judy.
Oh, you're cracking up, Foster.
Well, who do you like?
There's only one horse in this race, Tread Easy.
Tread Easy, huh?
Sure, he can't lose. I'm going to bet heavy on him. $4.
Tread Easy, huh?
I'll be back in a minute.
Well, where are you going, Foster?
To see how Judy feels about it.
Tread Easy? Oh, no, Father. There's nothing distinctive about him.
No?
No. I bet on Frisky Sal. That's sort of an interesting name.
How do you feel about that, Judy?
Frisky Sal? I'm sorry to contradict you, Mother, but that name mustn't interest me at all.
Oh, doesn't it?
Not in the least. Yes. Now, the horse that I...
Yes.
Well, don't you think that Hot Toddy is much cuter?
Oh, I do, Judy. I definitely do. As a matter of fact, I was fascinated by the name.
I bet on Hot Toddy.
Hot Toddy, that's fine. That's great. Excuse me, I'll be right back.
Goodness, where's your father running to?
To see a man about a horse.
Emerson!
What is it, Foster?
The line's too long. The race will start before I can get the mutual window. Make this $5 bet for me.
Oh, sure. Tread Easy?
No. Hot Toddy.
Hot Toddy? Are you kidding?
Please, Emerson. Hot Toddy.
But, Foster, I can't let you throw your money away.
Throw it away? But Judy said...
Now, look, Foster, don't be a child. The kid had a few lucky breaks.
Six in a row.
Coincidence. Pure coincidence. Get a grip on yourself, Foster. You're a grown man.
Yeah. Maybe you're right, Emerson. Couldn't happen again in a million... No. Hot Toddy, Emerson.
Oh, all right, Foster, it's your money.
Yes, it's my money, and I want it on Hot Toddy.
You don't like Hot Toddy, Emerson.
It's your money, Foster.
Yeah.
Well, she likes the name.
It's your money, Foster.
Yeah.
Well, she... All right, Emerson, bet it on Fred Easy.
I wonder who's betting on who.
He won!
I can't understand. It's very strange. I was positive Hot Toddy would win.
Yeah, but he didn't. Tread Easy won. You see, Judy, I told you, you can't win
your
all the...
Your attention, ladies and gentlemen. Your attention, please. Tread Easy has been disqualified.
What?
The winner of the seventh race is Hot Toddy.
What were you saying, Father?
No, it can't. They can't do this to me. Emerson, it's all his fault. I'll kill him.
I won. I knew he'd win. I knew it.
And the little lady wins again, Father.
She's uncanny. Seven in a row.
Foster.
Emerson, you touted me off.
Foster, I apologize. Now, who does this charming young lady like in the eighth? Judy? Tell me, huh? Huh?
Well, Mr. Emerson, I don't know. I don't think I'm going to bet on this race.
What?
No, Judy. No, don't say that.
Well, Father owes me enough money.
Please, Judy.
Melvin, if Judy wants to stop betting, she should.
Talk to her, Foster. You're her father. Talk to her.
You can win more, Judy. Lots more.
I'd rather not take a chance, Father.
Now, listen, Judy, we made an agreement. You are going to bet on every race, and you're going to. That's final.
That's telling her, Foster.
Well, all right.
Which one, Judy? What name do you like?
How about Easy Living?
No.
$30,000?
No.
Yeah.
You know, none of these names does anything to me.
Not even $30,000, Judy?
I'm afraid not, Mr. Emerson.
Foster, do something.
Judy, come with me.
Where are we going, Father?
To look at the horses again. Well, Judy?
Look at $30,000, Judy.
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry. None of them just...
Judy, please, Judy, I'm out $20.
Oh, I'm sorry, but... Wait, that one. I think he winked at me.
Winked at you? What does that mean?
Is that one? Number six. Let's see. Winner pile. Oh. Come on, Emerson.
Oh, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Just because the horse
winked. Listen, Emerson, if Judy says that horse winked at her, that's good enough for me. Well, don't look a gift horse in the mouth.
But you,
you can do what you want. As for me, I know what I do.
Wait, Foster. Wait for me.
Well, when Winterpile wins, I'll be able to pay off Judy and still end up a little to the good.
If he wins, Foster.
Oh, stop worrying, Emerson. He winked at Judy, didn't he? Well, there they are. Hello, Judy.
Hello, Father.
Melvin, where were you?
Oh, around. Well, Judy, so you think Winterpile's going to win, huh? I'll tell you a secret. I put a little bet on him myself.
But, Melvin, you said that
I know, I know, but a man can't pass up a sure thing, can he?
Remember the trap, Father.
Oh, this is different.
Father, would you mind if I sort of changed our bet?
What? Change our bet? What do you mean?
Well, I'm not sure Winterpile did wink at me.
What? Foster, you ruined me. You talked me
Shut up, Emerson. Judy, what are you saying?
Sure, and there's another horse I'd like to bet on.
Who? Quick, who is it? We might still be able to get a bet down on him. Who?
Well, I just remembered I once had a teacher whose name was Miss Simple.
So?
So, there's a horse in this race. His name is Miss Simple. I'd like to bet on that.
Yeah, come on, Emerson. We may still...
Well,
I think we can still get
oh,
that.
Oh, well...
Come on.
Oh,
too late.
Oh, Foster.
Can I change, Father?
No. You made me bet on Winterpile, so you've got to bet on him, too.
We'll go from track to track. We'll win a fortune.
What about the evils of betting, Father?
Oh, this isn't evil. This isn't betting. It's a sure thing. We'll go from track to track.
May I go with you, Foster? Come on, Winterpile!
Winterpile, drop dead.
I knew Miss Simple would win.
You said Winterpile. He winked at you.
But I changed my mind. I told you Miss Simple.
And I bet every single dollar on Winterpile.
Oh, Father, you poor unfortunate man.
You see, Judy, I told you. You never come out ahead betting. Never. Now, let this be a lesson to you.
Interesting.
What, Judy?
We have in our possession a very fine, generous father.
We have?
We certainly have. Imagine him going to the Bon Ton all by himself and buying this exquisite, charming dress simply because he overheard me mention purely by accident that I liked it.
Imagine.
Why, there is no limit to his kindness and generosity. He said he was going to buy the other one in the window for me, too.
No kidding.
No kidding. I just have to do one small favor for him.
What's that?
I have to pick in 8 winners for tomorrow.
A Date with Judy is written by Aline Wesley and stars Louise Erickson as Judy and John Brown as Father, with Tommy Cook as Randolph and Myra Marsh as Mother. Original music was composed by Paul Sartell and conducted by Konstantin Bakalinikov. The program was produced and directed by Helen Mack.
And these shows are from electrical transcriptions. That's why they sound just a little bit scratchy, but not too bad, thanks to modern technology. We just heard A Date with Judy.
Come to you through the worldwide facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service, the voice of information and education.
From September 19, 1944. Coming up next... Jack Benny. This is Radio Vaults on 89.3 WHFR Dearborn. Making the way is just for you.
Listener-supported, non-commercial radio from the campus of Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn.
Join me, BC, host of The Other Side, every Tuesday afternoon from 1 to 3 p.m. You'll hear great alternative, independent, and local rock and roll, mixed in with deep cuts from classic artists. I hope to see you on the other side this Tuesday at 1 p.m. Only on WHFR Dearborn, the station that is making waves.
The Jack Benny Program. With Barry Livingston, Phil Harris, Rochester, Dennis Day, and yours truly, Don Wilson. Ladies and gentlemen, let's go out to Jack Benny's house in Beverly Hills, where we find Jack and Phil Harris alone in the library.
Well, Jackson, you asked me to come out to your house and see you alone. What's all the mystery?
Wait a minute, Phil. I want to lock the door.
Okay, Jackson, what is it?
Just a second, Phil. I want to shut the window.
All right, all right. You locked the door, closed the window, and drew the blinds. Now, what do you want?
Phil, something's got to be done about your orchestra. I don't know what, kid, but something.
Are you kidding?
No, Phil. Look, I'll admit, when we're doing radio shows, I joke about your music. But now we're in my home, just the two of us. Believe me, I'm serious. Something has got to be done, or else.
Now, wait a minute, Jackson. Don't go getting tough with me. If you got any beef, talk to Petrillo.
I've already talked to Petrillo, and he's on my side. Believe me.
On your side? How do you like that? You miss your dues 1 week, and the mother hen starts kicking you out of the nest.
Look, Phil, after 10 years, I don't mind your band. I'm used to it. But listen to these letters I've been getting. Listen to this one. Dear Mr. Benny, I am a poultry farmer. I read in a magazine that music helps the hens lay more eggs. So I put a radio in the hen house. 2 weeks ago, I tuned in your program. The hens heard Phil Harris's orchestra. Now they are laying more eggs than ever, but the yolks are green. There you are, Phil. What do you think of that?
Green yolks? The guy's got something there. You can use them in martinis.
Please, maestro. Look, here's another one. Now get this other letter. Dear Mr. Benny, I am a professor of English and literature at Harvard, and for years and years I have consistently listened to your Sunday presentations. I have found your construction and continuity compact and concise, your dialogue singularly free of cliches and ponderosities. But Mr. Harris's musical ensemble stinks. And Phil, this proves he's a high-class professor. He spells stinks with a Y. Now, those two letters are just samples of the mail that comes in. Every week, I get thousands and thousands and thousands of letters like those.
Well, if I'm getting all that mail, I want more dough.
Well, Look, Phil, what I'm trying to tell you is that you better do something about your orchestra.
What are you talking about? I got one of the greatest musical aggravations in the country.
That's aggregation, but for once, you're right.
Of course I'm right. You take my boys. They've all got great backgrounds in the music business.
Oh, fine.
Sure, take Frankie, my guitar player. For 7 years, he played first washboard for Spike Jones.
Well, he's not playing the washboard now, so tell him to stop strumming his guitar with that box of duds. If he's that close to soap, why doesn't he get some of it on him? And Charlie, your piano player.
Now, wait a minute. Don't be talking about Charlie, my piano player. He held a job with Guy Lombardo's orchestra for 12 years.
12 years with Guy Lombardo?
Yeah, and he wasn't even a brother.
Phil, that has nothing to do with it. And believe me, Phil, I'm not picking on you. I'm just trying to arrive at an understanding. Now, Phil, I know you're sensitive. So I'm talking to you not as an employer, but as your friend. Now, let's try to... Phil, stop chewing on that ham hock and listen to me. Please.
I'm sorry, Jackson. I just happen to have one in my pocket.
All right, but Phil, I hope we understand each other now.
Okay, Jackson. Look, I gotta run along. You mind if I go?
No, go ahead. Phil, I said you can go. What are you waiting for?
Well, open the door, Richard.
Oh, yes.
So long, Jackson.
Hello, Phil.
Oh, hiya, Libby.
Mary, come on in the library. I want to hear all about your trip. Where'd you go?
Well, Jack, I thought you knew. I went back east to attend my mother and father's wedding anniversary.
Really? And how were the Duke and Duchess of Plainfield?
Oh, swell, you know, Jack, they have the cutest way of keeping track of their anniversaries. Each year on their wedding date, Papa snips off a lock of Mama's hair and puts it away.
Well, that's awfully sweet. How long have they been married?
I don't know. For the last 3 years, they've been calling Mama Baldy. And, Jack, you should have seen my sister, Babe. She looked beautiful. She wore a strapless evening gown and was really glamorous.
You know, Mary, those strapless gowns fascinate me. How do they keep them up?
I don't know about the other girl, but Babe uses fish hooks.
Fish hooks?
When Babe's out to catch a guy, she ain't kidding.
Well, how'd she do?
Oh, she's got a nice boyfriend now. He's a credit dentist.
Oh, you mean one of those dentists who let their patients put them on the installment plan?
Yeah, one of his slogans is, don't sit around and gum your hash just because you're short of cash.
That's one of his slogans? You mean he has others?
Yeah. His best one is, don't keep your lips closed in sorrow. Smile today and pay tomorrow.
Well, he certainly sounds like the right guy for Babe.
Yes, and he's very successful, too. He's the one who invented that new lower plate. It bites underwater.
Oh, yes, it's got those new ballpoint teeth. By the way, Mary, would you like to have dinner with me?
Oh, I can't, Jack. Dennis is coming by to pick me up in a few minutes. He's taking me to a movie.
Oh. How come you're going out with Dennis tonight?
Well, he called me up in Plainfield for the date.
Dennis phoned you in Plainfield? Long distance?
Yes, long distance.
Well, of course he has two shows. You know, Mary, I...
Hello, Mr. Benny, Mary.
Oh, hello, kid. We were just talking about you.
I'm ready to go, Dennis.
Hey, Mr. Benny, ask me what picture we're going to see.
What?
I say, ask me what picture we're going to see.
All right. Well, what picture are you going to see?
It's the one about a couple of deers.
A couple of deers? The yearling?
No, the Dolly sisters.
What?
Ha-ha! You sure stepped into that one.
Damn it.
For a big-time comedian, you ain't got that Oxidol sparkle.
Dennis, stop with the jokes, will you?
Come on, Dennis, let's go.
Wait a minute, kid. Hello? Oh, hello, Don. What? You've been rehearsing the commercial for next week? Don, what's so difficult about the commercial that you have to rehearse it? The quartet? No, Don, I'm not going to use them anymore. I don't care if they are in your room rehearsing. We're not going to... Well, all right, I'll listen to them. But I'm warning you, this is their last chance. Okay, put them on. Hello, fellas. Now cut that out. Just sing your commercial. Go ahead. It's not bad at all. LSMFT, I love you. da da dee da 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 dee. Say, that sounds beautiful. Da da dee da dee. Fellas, hold it. Hold it. You started out so beautifully. Look, fellas, that isn't what I want. Wait a minute. Put down back on. That's not what I... Hold it a minute, fellas. Put down back... Fellas. Fellas, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Wait a minute! That won't do, fellas, and tell Don I'll talk to him when I see him. Goodbye. They drive me nuts. I'm gonna... Oh, there's the phone again. I wonder who it is this time. Hello? Yes, this is Jack Benny. What? Well, I suppose I could, but of course I'll have to make some arrangements about my picture and radio commitment. Yes, I certainly will think it over. And it was nice of you to consider me. Thanks. Thanks very much. Goodbye.
What was that, Jack?
They want me to be governor of Georgia. Well, go ahead, kid. You can run along now.
All right. So long, Jack.
So long.
Goodbye, governor.
Goodbye, you all. Enjoy yourself. Da-da-dee-dum, dee-da-dum-dum, sweet Georgia Brown. Dee-da-dum. Oh, Rochester!
Yes, boss?
What do we got for dinner?
One used ham hock.
One used ham hock?
And turnip greens he had a hole in his other pocket.
Well, wipe the lint off of it. I'm hungry. Dinner, Rochester. Now I think I'll go in the library and get a book. Oh, here's one on the table.
But you finished it, boss.
I did?
Yeah, you called all the pictures in that one.
Oh, yes. Maybe I'll just read one for a change. I'll be in the library, Rochester. Gee, I don't know what to read. Here's a good book. The Great Balsamo by Maurice Zolotto. Here's another one, Life in the Swiss Alps by Sam Oleole. Here's another one, The Rover Boys on Mulholland Drive. Say, they're growing up. Here's one, I Stand Condemned by Maximilian Q. Langley. I Stand Condemned. I think I read that about a year ago. He was pretty good, exciting, too. I might as well read it again before I take it back to the library. Chapter 1. I Stand Condemned.
I am what you call an average citizen. I come from a little town in the Midwest. Yes, I'm married. I have a lovely wife. And we have three fine boys and a dog. George, Frank, Harry, and Fido. Harry is the dog. My life, as the lives of most men, followed a course pointed out by the fickle finger of fate. Most stories start at the beginning, but my story begins at the end. I am occupying a cell in the death row at the state penitentiary.
I'm innocent, I tell you. Let me out of here. Warden. Warden.
Yeah.
Warden, you gotta let me out of here. I'm innocent, do you hear? Innocent. And in a few minutes, they're gonna execute me. What time do I go to the chair?
5:30.
Good. And I won't have to listen to Fred Allen. No, what am I saying? Warden, I tell you, it wasn't my fault. I don't want to go to the electric chair.
Now, calm down. Our barber's a little rushed today, so I'll shave your head myself.
But, Warden...
Sit still. I'll start with the scissors.
Take it easy around the sideburns, please.
Yes, sir.
Manicure?
No, thank you. Wait a minute, let me out of here. I don't want to go to the electric chair. I won't leave this room. I can't walk that last mile.
Oh, you won't have to. We'll bring the electric chair in here.
What?
We have a long cord, you know.
But Warden, can't you hang me? I'm afraid of the chair. How will they know when I'm dead?
We have one of those new electric chairs. You pop up when you're done.
But Warden, I'm innocent. If you'll only listen to my story, I know you'll believe me.
Oh, very well. What is your story?
Well, Warden, it goes back a long, long time. I would have led a normal life, except for the fickle finger of fate.
The Warden listened to my story. I told him how I met the man who was responsible for my undoing. I had just left my office and was going home to my three wonderful children, Manny, Moe, and Jack. We had Manny and Jack and felt that we should have one Moe. Anyway, I was walking down the street when suddenly... a figure stepped out of the shadows. He was a tall man with a sort of a square face. He reminded me somewhat of Boris Karloff. But his voice was so pleasant when he tapped me on the shoulder and said...
Pardon me, please, but may I trouble you for a match?
Match? I'm sorry, I don't have one, but I'll let you use my cigarette lighter.
Thank you. You're very kind.
Hey, you! Come back with that lighter! Give me that!
All right. Here's your lighter.
But why were you running away? I thought you just wanted to light a cigarette.
I do, but my cigarette is home.
Well, you have no right... Wait a minute. You look so much like Boris Karloff.
Thanks. You're looking well yourself.
Thank you.
However, my resemblance to Mr. Karloff is purely physical. For instance, I would never think of going to a cemetery in the black of night, opening graves and stealing the gold teeth out of dead bodies.
Huh?
That's dishonest, you know.
Yes. Wait a minute. You were trying to steal my cigarette lighter, weren't you?
No, I wasn't. As a matter of fact, I'd like to buy it. I'll give you $20,000 for it.
$20,000? Well, I don't want to take advantage of you. I'll tell you what. I'll throw in an extra flint.
Just as I said, you're very kind. Here is the money. A $20,000 bill. Gosh.
Well, so long, mister. I hope you enjoy the lighter.
Just a moment, please. I also admire your necktie.
My necktie!
I know it sounds fantastic, but he bought my tie for $17,000. And then he bought my shirt and my shoes and my suit. As I gave him my last stitch of clothing, this mysterious stranger handed me $194,000 and two balloons. Having no clothes, I blew up the balloons and danced my way home. The next day, I met the same mysterious man for a second time. Again, he gave me fabulous prices for my clothes. And again, I danced my way home. On the third day, the same thing happened. I was not only getting richer, but I was dancing better. Our daily meetings were more than mere coincidence. A bond developed between us. 2 weeks later, I was sitting in the kitchen having breakfast with my wife and my three lovely children, Minsk, Pinsk, and Busher. The mysterious stranger had not yet come downstairs. Yes, he was living with us.
Come on, children, finish your breakfast.
That's right, children, eat your food.
But, Daddy, can't we have milk like we used to? I'm tired of champagne on my grape nuts.
Oh, you can't have milk. It costs practically nothing. Where's Junior?
Oh, he's out in the backyard feeding $20 bills to the cows.
Feeding our money to the cows? That's ridiculous.
No, it isn't, Pa. We haven't any more bags to keep it in.
Anyway, he's been out there long enough. I'll call him.
Junior! Junior, get ready for school.
Oh, Daddy, I don't want to go to that new school.
I bought it, and you'll go to it. Now, get ready.
You know, darling, things just haven't been the same since that stranger came to live with us. He frightens me. There's something eerie about him.
I've been feeling the same...
Shh. Quiet. Here he comes now.
Yes. As we were talking, he opened the door and walked into the room. He was wearing sneakers. As I rose from the table, he said...
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Did you sleep well?
Yes, I did. Nah. Sit down.
Thank you. I'm sorry I'm late for breakfast, but I overslept. I was out at a party last night.
A party? Well, how do you feel this morning? Oh, well, have some tomato juice.
Yes, I'll get you some.
You know I envy you two. A beautiful home. Lovely children.
Haven't you any children?
No. I married a smudge pot.
You married a smudge pot?
Oh, then you haven't any children.
No. But we're lousy with oranges.
Oh.
By the way, I don't feel I should live here any longer without paying you rent. How much do you want?
Well, I'm no good at these things. Let's forget it.
Oh, but I insist. Would $1 million a week be enough?
Well, with or without meals?
With meals.
That'll be $3 extra.
I'll be glad to pay it.
Glad?
Things like this were happening every day. I'd gone money mad. Money, money, money. My wife left me. And so did my three lovely children. Sarah, Toga, and Trunk. I didn't care. I had my money. I accumulated millions of dollars, which I kept in my shoes. I was now 11 feet six. I begged the OPA to raise the the ceiling. One day, as I was sweeping some loose change under the rug, he came in.
Hello, my friend. Look, I have a present for you. A brand new $10,000 bill.
A $10,000 bill? Let me have it. Give it to me quick. I gotta have it.
All right, but be careful how you handle it. The ink is still wet.
Don't worry, I'll... The ink is still wet. Wait a minute. You mean you've been printing this money yourself?
Certainly. But doesn't everybody?
Oh, so that's it. I must have been blind not to see through this whole scheme. My life is ruined. I've lost my wife and my three lovely children. Chico, Pico, and Sepulveda. I thought I was rich, but I haven't got a tie or a shirt or a suit. All I got is money, money, money. And all counterfeit. You've even got my cigarette lighter. And I, like a fool, threw in an extra flick.
Yes, you are a fool. You think I'd really pay you $17,000 for a necktie, $22,000 for your button shoes?
Now, wait a minute.
Yes, you are a fool. Do you think I'd give you $500 for a dinner when I can get the same thing at Ciro's for $400?
Ciro!
Of course that money was counterfeit.
And those balloons you gave me weren't any good either. They broke on the Sunset bus and embarrassed me. So all this time, you've been nothing but a counterfeiter.
Well, what's the difference? We can still do business. I can print the money and you can get rid of it for me.
Never, never, never. I'll kill you for it. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to kill you.
Oh, get your hands off my throat. Take them away. Take them away. Don't kill me. I'll give you back your clothes.
My clothes? What good are they now? You had the pants lengthened and the coat let up. You even lost the string out of my pajamas.
Didn't you? Please stop choking me. Choking me.
Oh, why must I always die in the end?
There.
Yes, I killed him. And as I finished telling my story, the warden looked at me and said,
"It's 5:30, shall we go?"
And so, as I walked through the little green door, I thought of my three lovely children, Finger, Fickle, and Clyde. I stand condemned.
I want to thank Boris Karloff for appearing here tonight, and he can currently be seen in his latest RKO picture, Bedlam.
Well, say, Jack.
Yes, Don.
I understand you're going to be on Kenny Baker's program in the morning.
Yes, I am, Don. Will you pick me up for rehearsal?
Yes, Jack. Rehearsal is at 7:30 a.m.
Oh. Well, don't bother. I'll go right over there from here. Good night, folks.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
And there you have Jack Benny. I'm the jumper, the one who wrote that Trailways bus out of Louisiana. One hot summer July is 103. No air conditioning on the bus. How did I keep cool? I had a fan from the Mount Zion Baptist Church. Every time I go home, the pastor said, "You didn't have to take my church fan all the way to Detroit." My show is called Cruising and Bluesing in the Nighttime, 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. every Wednesday. We do the blues, and we got blues you can use.
Once again, Palmolive Brushless and Palmolive Lather, Palmolive, the largest selling brand of shaving creams in the world, present Can You Top This? Starring Senator Ford.
Good evening.
Harry Hirschfield.
Howdy.
And Joe Lurie Jr.
Hello.
And now, here's Palmolive Shave Cream's master of ceremonies, Ward Wilson.
Good evening, friends. Welcome to Can You Top This? Our unrehearsed corn roast. Our three wits do not know what jokes have been chosen until the people's representative, Peter Donald, tells them on the air. Our three gangsters have no scripts. They rely on memory and ability to switch jokes and make them fit the subject. If Peter Donald tells your submitted story, you get $10 plus a phonograph record, personally autographed by our wits, of Peter Donald telling your story on the air. Laughs are registered on the big Palm Olive shave meter in full view of the studio audience. Each time our wits fail to top your score, you win an additional $5, which means you may win $25. So let's get on with the laughs. Are you ready, fellas?
Ready.
Yeah.
All right, here we are. Our first joke of the evening comes from M. Supplant of Boston, Massachusetts, and it's on the subject... Well, I won't make any comment about this. It's on the subject of stupidity. Stupidity. So, Peter, don't be backward in coming forward.
Well, this happened on a new radio quiz show called Like It or Lump It, and they got a quizmaster up there, and he said, well, sir, he said, here's a smiling, intelligent gentleman stepping up to our microphone. He says, tell me, sir, what is your name? The contestant said, would you mind repeating that question, please? He says, my dear sir, what is your name? Don't you even know your name?
I said, well, I'm a little preoccupied tonight. See, my sister just had a baby.
He said, oh, well, isn't that fine, a boy or a girl?
She said, that's just it. They ain't told me yet, and I don't know whether I'm an aunt or an uncle.
Well, he says, well, tell me, sir, he says, what do you do?
He says, what do I do? Oh, I used to be an elevator operator, but I quit.
He says, you quit?
He says, yeah, I could never remember the route. It was awful.
Fellow said, I see. Well, I better give you a very simple question. He said, what is the 4th of July?
She said, 4th of July. That's what you said, isn't it? The 4th of July.
He said, yes, the 4th. What is it?
This is the 4th of July. Gee, you better ask me another question on account of I was never very good at fractions.
You may as well toss that one off, Pete, and lose it fast. He takes my suggestion, too. The Palm Olive Shave Meter gave that one exactly 300 that time, Peter, which allows plenty of latitude for our three wits as they swing into action. Apparently only one's going to swing. now two, it's increasing. Well, let's see. Mr. Supplant has 300 to top, and Joe Laurie's going to take the first shot at it.
Yeah. This pet shop, fellow owns a pet shop, calls up for a messenger boy to deliver a package. So this goof messenger boy comes in and I say, look, here's the package, and here's the address. I'll write it down for you on a slip of paper. Don't lose it now. So they write the address down. He says, and deliver this package. So the guy's walking along humming to himself, and he hears a noise in the box. So you wonder what that noise is. He hears noise, something rushing around a box or something. So he says, I think I'll take a look what's in the box. So he puts it on the ground, unties the box, opens it up, and out jumps a rabbit. And a rabbit starts running down the street, and he runs after it. Finally, he says, oh, go on and run, go on. Go on, you don't know where you're going. I got the address in my pocket.
Well, apparently you knew where you were going with that one, Joe. That was 1,000, top of the Palm Olive Shave Meter that time, topping Mr. Supplant's 300 and leaving him still with the $10 he started out with. And, Senator, I think your hand was raised second.
Well, of all the stupid gags, I think this is one of them. It's an old minstrel gag, Ward. And maybe you and I could do this together. See, I could say to you, hello, Ward, and then you say, hello, Ed, and I say, Ward, how do you get down off an elephant? And you say, jump down. I say, no. Then you say, use a ladder and get down. I say, no. And you say, climb down. I say, no. You don't get down off an elephant. You get down off a duck. Yah, 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 yah. Minstrelsy, see?
Yeah. Come to think of it, we could do that one, but let's not, huh?
Well, no, that's not the joke. I thought maybe we'd try that.
Oh.
Of all the stupid guys I know, Dopey Dildock is the one. Dopey went into the local drugstore and he asked for some soap. Wanted to buy some soap, and the druggist said, do you want it scented or unscented? He said, I want it unscented. I'm going to take it with me. Yeah.
Let's go back to the minstrel, huh?
He took his black off.
Well, the facts and figures
I know
are...
another one.
You do?
Probably just as bad, though.
Let's try it anyway, huh?
Well, two dopes were talking, and one said, who's this guy Tide I always hear about? I don't know nobody by the name of Tide. He said, sure, I go down to Coney Island, and I hear him hollering, hi, Tide, low Tide.
You know, that's like Tommy Gray years ago when Lee Schubert and Marcus Lowe walked down to Broadway and Tommy passed him and says, "Hi, Lee, hello." Let me tell you, yuck, 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 yuck.
Why did we have to stir your memory, Joe? Well, the facts and figures are 250 on the Palmolive shave meter for that last joke.
Oh, never mind the figures. I got a laugh out of myself. Nobody else did, but I did.
Well, congratulations anyway, Senator. That doesn't top Mr. Supplant's 300, however, so he now has $15, and whether or not he gets 20 or holds a 15 is entirely dependent on Harry Hirschfield.
Me? There's a goof comes to work, and he brings his lunch with him, and he opens it up, and he shows a 10-decker sandwich to another employee. Says, "Look at this sandwich. See, at the top, you know, is corned beef. Then I got some cheese. And then he says, I got some tongue. And then I got some fish. And then I got some tomato. And from the bottom, he says, I got tongue again. And then I got some corned beef. Then I got some roast beef. And in the middle is that terrible pot cheese. I don't like pot cheese." So the guy says, "Well, wait a minute. Just don't eat that part, the pot cheese." He said, "Well, it's already made up. I'll eat it." So the next day, he comes again with a 10-decker sandwich, and he calls the employee again. He says, "See, the same thing. On top, I got corned beef, then I got tongue, then I got fish, then I got tomato. In the bottom, it starts with egg, and then I'm going to get fish." And he says, "Then I got another corned beef. In the middle, that terrible pot cheese again." The next day, he comes again with a 10-decker sandwich. He said, "The same thing again today. The same thing. See, the top, corned beef, then tongue. He says, then fish, and he says, then egg. In the bottom, I got tomato and fish and tongue and again in the middle, the terrible pot cheese." The fellow said, "What are you complaining about? The next time, simply tell your wife to leave out the pot cheese." She says, "She's on a vacation. I make these up myself."
Well... you have nothing to make up there, Harry. That was 1,000 on the
Palmolive shaving. I wish I had some pot cheese in the middle of my gag.
It's a good thing that guy didn't come to work for 7 days. That's the only thing I'm happy about.
You know, that was a 30-decker sandwich?
A big deal, believe me. Well, since only one of our wits failed to top Mr. Supplant's 300 that time, we send Mr. Supplant $15 with the compliments of Palmolive shave creams, plus... a phonograph record, an actual phonograph record of Peter Donald telling his story on the air. And now to continue our contest of wit and humor, here's a joke which was sent in by Dorsey B. Thomas of Cisco, Texas. And the subject of this joke is suitor. Suitor. No cloak and suitor. This is just the Swain deal, I think. So, Peter, hope you're married to this joke.
Well, away in the backwoods lived an old mountaineer and his very, very beautiful daughter. So one day, old Pappy was out in the yard. He's running the lawnmower over his toes to trim his corns, and he's biding the time of day, and all of a sudden up the trail comes young Zeb Terwilliger. So he came up and he said, "Pardon me all to pieces, Mr. McCoy, but I got a question to ask you." So old Pappy looked up and he says, "Why, ain't you the young whelp what's been a-sparking my pretty daughter, Novocaine, for 2 months?" He says, "Yes, sir, that I am." He said, "Gee, your daughter is pretty." He says, "Her eyes is just as soft and pretty as a razorback hog's." And he says, "I want to hitch up with her."
He says, "You want to marry my daughter, huh?" He says, "Do you love her?"
He says, "Do I love her?" He says, "Mr. McCoy, to me, that gal is worth her weight in gold."
He says, "Well," he says, "if that's the way you feel, I think you're going to have to wait a couple of weeks."
He says, "What for? For you to think it over?"
He says, "No, if she's worth her weight in gold, I want to fatten her up a little bit."
Well, facts are facts, I guess, Pete, and we must face them. 250 on the Palmolive shave meter that time. He's throwing that gag over with the first one. Nice
the
company.
The gag should have been fattened up a little bit.
It could. It was a little on the lean side, I would say. But you fellas should be very happy about the whole thing. Mr. Thomas has $10, and it looks like he's liable to stay right there if you fellas hit any kind of a peek at all. Who's throwing this cord in my face here on this microphone? I'm getting cockeyed. Let's see. We have all three hands up this time. And
well,
first...
that's something we know something about.
Suitors? Suitors? Okay, let's see what Harry knows about it.
Well, this is another goof story. A marriage broker arranged for this goof to call on a girl with a prospect of marriage. Now, he says she's a very fine girl, And don't say anything that shows you don't know anything or anything. Keep your subjects general. The first impression must be very good. Says, you know, talk about food, because anybody can talk about food, and talk about our family, and then a little philosophy at the end. So he comes there, and he meets her, and it's quiet for a long while, and finally says, ooh, do you like fudge? She said, no. There's a lapse of about 20 minutes. He says, does your sister like fudge? Says, I haven't got any sister. Then there's a lapse of about 20 minutes more. He said, if you had a sister, would she like fudge?
Shake hands with Peter Donald, Harry. Oh, Pete's going to dust both of his throwaways off after that one, and I can't blame him either.
Oh,
Harry, your response should be, oh, fudge, on that one, believe me.
You don't have to announce
it. Well, I think I better. For Mr. Thomas's sake, he'll be happy about it. Got $200 on the palm olive shave meter that time, so he now has $15, whereas just a moment ago he only had $10. And let's see what the senator's going to do about it.
Well, here's a quickie. This doesn't count, Ward. This is about a different kind of a suit. You know, a lot of big businessmen want to change their underwear. They want to get rid of those portal-to-portal union suits. Well, anyhow, Ditsy Baumwortle and Dopey Dildock were talking, and Ditsy said, hey, Dopey, do you believe in love at first sight? And Dopey said, yeah, it saves a lot of time. So Ditsy said, well, my Uncle Pete, he met a woman and he fell in love with her at first sight, and now they're engaged. It's what you might call a vegetable romance. Dopey said, what do you mean a vegetable romance? Ditsy said, he's a deadbeat and she's an old tomato.
Well, that showed definite improvement that time, Senator.
Anything would have been an improvement after one.
$750 on the palm olive shaving.
I'll get there.
Well,
that's
not
evening,
Mr. Thomas's $250. Needless to say, he still has his $15, and the only missing link in this story, and I say that reservedly, is Joe Laurie Jr.
Well, the fellow is keeping company with a girl a long time. Finally, they're together one night, and he says, "Now, listen, honey, look. We've been keeping company here for 3 years. He says, look, I've got a good job, and you're working. You've got a good job. Let's get married. She says, oh, we can't get married. He says, why not? She says, my firm, if they find out that I'm married, she says, they'll just sack me. They'll just discharge me. You know, that's a very definite thing with our firm. They discharge me. He says, well, we'll get married, and we'll keep it a secret. We won't tell anybody about it. She says, yeah, but supposing we have a baby. He says, oh, we'll tell the baby.
You just slid slightly under the senator that time, Joe. You had $700 on the palm olive shave meter, which was enough to top Mr. Thomas's
$250. Seven, that's a natural.
Yes, it is. Oh, I don't know why you didn't get an 11. But since only one of our wits failed to top Mr. Thomas's $250, we sent Mr. Thomas $15 with the compliments of palm olive shave creams. And just to make him feel a little happier, let's send him a copy of the Can You Top This joke book written by our three wits and now on sale wherever books are sold. And in addition, we're sending Mr. Thomas an actual phonograph record of Peter Donald telling his story on the air. Well, let's get a fresh start, and here's a joke which was sent in by Eugene Riley of Buffalo, New York, and this is on the subject of something I know you're all deeply steeped in, courtesy. Courtesy. So, Peter, if you please.
Well, Mike Muldoon came over to this country from Ireland. He got a job in the police department. Well, he studied very hard to be a good cop, and he read all the books, and he was exemplary character. And finally, he got put out on the beat. And his first day, and he's so proud of his uniform, and he's walking up and down Times Square here. He said, now we got to remember to be nice and courteous to all the visitors and answer all the questions. He said, they better be sure I know the answers. Now, let me see. The right side of the street is for the traffic going that way. The left side is for the traffic coming this way. The white line in the middle, that's for bicycles. All right, now I got it all straight. I'm ready, all right.
So he stands there, and pretty soon a fella comes up and says, officer, can you help me?
He says, me dear sir, I would be delighted.
He says, well, officer, I'm a stranger in town. I'm lost. I don't know which way I'm going. Which way is north?
He said, north. That's, north is the... He said, you said north?
He says, yeah, north.
He said, look, buddy, we got uptown, we got downtown, we got crosstown.
Now you have to come along and make it tough for me by asking for North.
Well, it seems to be seems to be a little tough for you tonight, Pete. That was exactly 500 on the Palmolive Shave Meter that time for Mr. Riley. So he starts off with $10. I don't know just where he's going to wind up. Two hands are upraised. They're all anxious to get in tonight with these low scores that Pete's been bagging with.
I'm under one of them.
Well, Harry, suppose we elect you to try again.
This is during the war, and a new GI is in this camp, and a general passes. And he's complaining, and he says to another GI, "Jeez, look at that's the trouble with the world. The world forgets so easy. Think of a guy like that doing that, pointing to the general. Guy said, what happened? He said, you know, last night I was for the first time on sentry duty. And he came along, this general. And I said, who goes there? And he said, friend. Now he goes by like he don't even know me.
Well, 950 you'll be happy to hear, Harry, on the Palmolive Shave Meter that time, which was a little over Mr. Riley's 500. Therefore, he still retains his original $10. And, Joe, I think your hand was raised second.
Dmitry Samovar, the Russian, takes his wife into a restaurant. And the order, he says, I want a steak for two. So, after a few minutes or so, the steak comes on a big plate for two. And he takes the knife and fork and starts carving it. And cuts a little bit, about a quarter of the steak, and gives it to his wife. Then he takes the three quarters for himself. And she looks at it. She looks at her portion, then looks at his. And she says, Dmitry. He says, what? He says, you show me no courtesy. He says, what do you mean, courtesy? She says, if I was putting out the steak, if I was cutting the steak, if I was serving the steak, I would give myself the small piece and you the big piece. He says, what are you kicking about? You got the little piece, ain't you?
Well, you didn't get too large a piece of the Palmolive Shave Meter that time, Joe. 750 to be exact, but it was good enough to top Mr. Riley's 500. So that same $10 is dogging him consistently along the line. And, Senator, how about you?
Well, there's a very old gag that I can tell about courtesy. Teacher said to a little boy, she said, Tommy, what did Sir Walter Raleigh say to Queen Elizabeth? He said, well, Sir Walter Raleigh put out his coat and he said, step on it, kid. You know, I was wondering, since since Sir Walter Raleigh established chivalry by putting his cloak down and letting the queen walk on it, what she would have done if she'd been out with Mahatma Gandhi. Well, anyway, there was a... This is the gag now.
This is it.
This is it. Let me see now. I forgot it now that I was... I had one there for
we're
a minute
still
ago.
On curtis,
well,
right?
a dopey farmer kid was up on the farm, and a summer boarder said to him, you know, that was a very nice thing you did this afternoon when you opened the barn door to let your aunt in. He said, oh, shucks, that's nothing. I do that for the cows every night.
I'm glad that was it, Senator. That was 600 on the Palmolive Shave Meter that time, topping by just 100.
What happened to that 1,000 on this meter?
I don't know. I think that's out for the evening. However, we'll find out a little later, I hope. Gee, was all you three wits topped Mr. Riley's 500 that time, so here's the bad tidings for Mr. Riley. We send him $10 with the compliments of Palmolive Shave Creams, plus a copy of the new Can You Top This Joke book written by our three wits and now on sale wherever books are sold. And if he would care for it, in addition, we're sending Mr. Riley an actual phonograph record of Peter Donald telling his story on the air. Well, our next joke comes from Jack Norworth of Laguna Beach, California, and the subject of this round is fortune teller. Fortune teller. So,
that
Pete.
The Jack Norworth that wrote Shine on Harvest Moon? And
that and take me out to the ball game, too, I believe. There's only one Jack Norworth that I know of. I hope he's in the Jack. Pete, we hope you don't need any good fortune with this one.
You know, I predict that next week in Buffalo, Boston, and Cisco, Texas, three hawk shops will have an actual recording of Peter Donald telling
Oh, dear. Anyway, this is about a very, very ritzy lady, very, very swanky, and she decided to have afternoon tea, so she saw a place called Princess Zuzu's Gypsy Tea Room.
So there's a big sign on the front that says, "Have your future told by the Gypsy Princess." Well, that was fine, so she went in and she ordered tea and waffles. And then after the meal was over, she sent for Princess Zuzu. And out came a dark woman with earrings in her ears and a turban on her head on which was inscribed the mystic inscription, "Statla Hotel," right across the front. So the customer said, "Oh, are you the Gypsy Princess?"
The princess says, "So what do I look like, Shirley Temple?" "Certainly, I'm Princess Zuzu." Says, "I'm the queen of the Ipsy Pipsy Gypsies, that's me."
She says, "Well," she says, "Princess, your tea was very nice, but your waffle was rather tough."
She says, "My waffle was tough." She says, "Listen, honey, maybe the waffle wouldn't be so tough if you first lifted up the veil from your face when you eat." She says, "Now, you want I shall tell your fortune from the leaves in the tea, or the lumps in the cocoa, or from the crystal ball?"
She says, "Well, I should like the crystal ball."
She says, "Very well, now be quiet, silence." She says, "I gaze into the crystal, abracadabra, Marshaloo Parkway." "Open the door, Dunninger." She says, "Now let me look in the crystal ball and see your future."
So the customer said, "Just a moment. I think you're a fraud. Look at that crystal. It has three holes in it."
She says, "So the crystal ball's got three holes in it? So what? On Wednesday nights, I like to go bowling."
Well, you finally found the key to success, Peter. 1,000, the top of the palm olive shave meter that time. Automatically giving Mr. Norworth $25.
No, wait,
probably more money than he's had
now.
In years now. And let's see. Oh, you three fellas can't do anything about taking this away from him.
Well, that's
so,
why I was willing to go in first. Well, can't do anything about it
you
anyhow.
You seem to have plenty of competition. Everybody's hands are up on this one. So how about you, Senator? We'll start with you.
Well, Mrs. Cook went to a fortune teller, and she said, "What is it a sign of when a black cat follows you home?" And the fortune teller said, "That's a sign you're going to have kittens all over the house." So she said, "I will now look into my crystal eight ball. I see that I see Venus. That means you are going to fall in love. I see Mars. That means you are going to have a fight. I see you dunk donuts. That means that you were born under the sign of the Great Dipper. And now I see that... Now I see that a blonde is chasing your husband. And I see also that she's going to get him. And Mrs. Cook said she'll have to go some. I buried him 3 years ago."
Apparently you found the secret too, Senator. 1,000, top of the palm olive shave meter that time.
I know if this thing lasted long enough, I'd get up there.
Well, Joe, I think you were second.
Well, this is about a woman, a big, big fat woman, gets on one of those fortune-telling weighing machines. She gets on there and she puts in the penny and she waits and the little card comes out. It says, "You weigh 300 pounds. You are very stout." She says, "Oh, something's wrong with this." So she said, "I'll try again." So she puts another penny in. Comes out the card, says, "You weigh 300 pounds. You are very stout." So she hits the machine a little bit. She says, "Oh, something must be wrong. I'll try it once again." So she puts in another penny. And out comes a card that says, "Listen, Beef Trust, I won't lie for a lousy penny."
Well, I won't lie either, Joe. 1,000, top of the palm olive shave meter that time. Once again, giving us a perfect round thus far. And, Harry, it's up to you.
Yeah, I thought a couple. I want to throw in a preface, a quick preface. Fella goes to a Russian fortune teller. The fortune teller looks in the glass ball, the crystal ball, and says, "You are going on a trip. You are going to Pazbul." Fella says, "Pazbul? Where's Pazbul?" He said, "Near Moscow."
Harry. Well, I don't think, as a matter of fact, Harry, we're going to have time for the joke after that. We'll go along with the preface and call that the gag, because you can't go anyplace anyway. So, well, let's save the gag for next week, because none of you three have topped Mr. Norworth's 1,000. So we send Mr. Norworth $25 with the compliments of Palm Olive Shave Creams, plus a 1,000 club certificate. And in addition, we're sending Mr. Norworth an actual phonograph record of Peter Donald telling his story on the air and a piece of cut plug to go with it. friends, the time's wasted now, so join Can You Top This again next week. Same time, same gang, other jokes, some new, some old. Until then, we remain yours for bigger and better laughs.
Senator Ford.
Harry Hirschfield.
Joe Laurie Jr.
Peter Donald.
Ward Wilson.
And Charles Stark saying goodnight for Palmolive Brushless and Palmolive Lather. Palmolive, the largest selling brand of shave creams in the world.
Today, dealers are paying higher prices than ever before for used cooking fats and oils. Save them. Turn them in for cash. Remember, industry needs these fats and oils urgently to help produce soap, automobiles, refrigerators, all the things you want to need. Remember this, too. The shortage of fats and oils is a worldwide problem, so keep right on saving cooking fats and oils.
Stay tuned in for the Judy Canova Show, which follows immediately over most of these same stations.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
Remind yourself every Monday night at 9 p.m., Beats to the Rhymes of Sean Daniel, tune in. Going live every Monday from 9 to 11 p.m., exclusively only heard at 89.3 WHFR.FM, the station making waves across the Great Lakes.
And, of course, we are listener-supported non-commercial radio from the campus of Henry Ford College. It's WHFR Dearborn, featuring local and independent artists. Welcome to our third and final hour of today's Radio Vault. We have on tap Deluxe Radio Theater. And as I mentioned at the very beginning, we've been featuring shows that started out as radio shows, then they became movies, and then they became radio shows all over again. So the original broadcast date on this one is May 8, 1959. It's William Bendix, the original actor from the radio show and the movie. They didn't play any games on this one like they did with Agnes Moorehead. Once again from May 8, 1950, the Lux Radio Theater on WHFR Dearborn. Let's check it out.
Lux presents Hollywood. Lieber Brothers Company, the makers of Lux Toilet Soap, bring you the Lux Radio Theater. Starring William Bendix with Rosemary DeCamp, Richard Long, and Meg Randall in The Life of Riley. Ladies and gentlemen, your producer, Mr. William Keeley.
Greetings from Hollywood, ladies and gentlemen. During the so-called good old days of the theater, plays sometimes ran for years, and actors were often completely identified with one role for most of their lives. The same is more or less true today in radio, and particularly so with that clever and lovable comedian, William Bendix, who has become identified with one Mr. Riley, just as lovable, but not as clever. Tonight's play, The Life of Riley, was based on the famous radio series, and the Irving Brecker production for Universal International Studio was a great screen hit. In addition to Bill Bendix, we have Rosemary DeCamp, Richard Long, and Meg Randall, all from the original screen cast. I know you'll be interested to hear that another of our Lux girls has won new honors. I'm sure you remember Jackie Lee Barnes, the winner of the national contest for the most beautiful 15-year-old Lux girl. In the June issue of Modern Screen Magazine, she's been selected as America's most promising teenage beauty. And so, once again, our congratulations go to that lovely Lux girl, Jackie Lee Barnes of Albuquerque. Now, here's The Life of Riley, starring William Bendix as Riley, Rosemary DeCamp as Peg, Richard Long as Jeff, and Meg Randall as Babs, with John Brown as Digger Odell. There's no doubt about it, America's a land of miracles, where dreams come true. Take that penniless farmer, Reuben Shipp. He discovered gold while plowing his field. Today, he's living the life of Riley. For the starving Indian who drove a tent stake into the ground and struck oil. Today, he's living the life of Riley. And this is the story of Chester A. Riley, who is just living.
You see what I mean, Riley? If you had money, we wouldn't have to walk home from work. You could be driving me home in a swell car.
Hey, you worry too much about money, Gillis. Money don't bring happiness.
How would you know? You ain't never had none. Now take our boss, Prince.
Yeah, Mr. Stevenson's okay, but I'd rather be just a riveter. If you're a big executive and you got $1 million and houses and cars and a yacht and you croak, look at all the pleasure you're giving up. With us, we don't lose nothing.
Okay, money's bad. I hate it. But what are you going to tell your wife when you get home with only $5 in your pay envelope?
My wife never dares to question me about money. Besides, my peg knows I'm doing the best I can with the brains I got.
Oh, she respects you, huh?
My family looks up at me like I was a king. My home is my castle.
Well, so long, Your Majesty.
So long, Gillis. See you back in the shop on Monday. Hiya, subject.
Hiya, Pop.
Hello, Daddy.
Well, they remember me.
Riley, dear, you're home. Yeah. You tired, dear?
Yeah, but it's sure great to be home where nobody nags at you.
Hey, Pop, the landlady's looking for you.
Hmm?
Miss Bogle, the landlady.
No. You gave Miss Bogle a July rent, didn't you, Riley?
Why, sure I did, Dumplin'. I paid the July rent last week. It's June she's after.
Huh?
I mean,
But you got paid today at the plant.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Well, then go on out and... Riley, where's your pay envelope?
Oh, well, here it is, honey.
There. No, Peg. Don't look in there. It's practically naked.
$5.
Now, don't get excited, Peg. I can explain everything.
I'm listening.
Well, it's like this. You see that kid over there, you know, Junior?
I've met the boy.
Well, the braces for his teeth.
But you paid for that, $30.
Yeah, well, there was the balance, $50. Here's the receipt.
Balance? Yeah. You didn't tell me about any balance.
Well, I didn't know, Peg. I signed a contract that I couldn't read the fine print. Peg, I need glasses.
You need something. $5. How am I going to run the house next week? And what about the electric bill? You know they threatened to turn off our lights.
Well, we'll make out somehow. Gee, you ought to be happy now that we own Junior outright. Smile, Junior.
Oh, Riley, if you'd only let me handle the money.
You handle the money. A female woman handling the finances in my own house. Well, I'll leave it to you kids. I bring home the pay envelope. Who ought to handle the money? Your mother or me?
Mom.
Who asked you? Go wash your hands. Work and slave for what? Nobody appreciates it.
Oh, of course we do, Daddy. It's not your fault you're caught in this trap. You're just an innocent victim of marriage.
I am?
Yes. To quote Professor Lipscott, why the average husband and father is an economic slave to family obligations. Now, if you'd stayed single, you might have had a wonderful career, like I'm going to have.
Fine career you'd have if I'd have stayed single.
I'll get it. Hello? Who? Why, hello, Sydney.
Sydney who?
I can't believe it's you, Sydney. It's been over 10 years.
Sydney Monahan from Brooklyn?
Yeah, isn't it wonderful, Riley?
Wonderful? That foul ball from Ebbets Field? Hang up, Peg. The coffee's boiling over in the kitchen.
I'm not making coffee. What did you say, Sydney? Oh, Sydney, you mustn't say such things. I'm an old married woman now. Wait a minute. Riley, I think the coffee's boiling over in the kitchen.
You're not making coffee.
Daddy, please, Mother's trying to talk.
Monahan, that sponger, never had a quarter to his name. I know, I tried to borrow from him. Give me that phone.
Huh?
Monahan, this is Riley. Yeah, Mr. Peg Riley, see? So why don't you just... I stole her away from you. I'm an old horse thief, huh? Hold the phone. Peggy just called you a horse.
Huh?
Well, she married the right guy, Monahan. Yeah, sure, I'm doing all right. I'm knocking him dead, that's all. Yeah, sure, come on out. Come to dinner. 6 o'clock, yeah. Yeah, goodbye.
You invited Sydney for dinner? You don't even like him.
Who don't like him? I despise him. When you see that sponger, you'll realize you didn't make no mistake marrying me.
Will you stop raving? Babdir, you better pick some flowers for the table.
All right, Mother, but say, who is this Mr. Monahan? Is he some old flame of yours?
Flame? I made a clinker out of him.
A comedian yet?
Junior.
Oh, okay, Pop. Okay, I'll wash.
Go ahead.
Excuse me, I see you're picking flowers.
Oh,
and I...
Well, yes, I am picking flowers.
Only you don't seem to have very many to pick.
Well, no, I guess I don't.
Well, that's why I brought these from next door. Here, take them.
Why, these are Miss Bogle's.
Yes, they are, and I'm her nephew.
Miss Bogle's nephew? From next door?
Yes, that's right. I just arrived this morning. My name's Jeff Taylor.
But Miss Bogle is our landlady.
Well, maybe the flowers weren't included in the lease, but won't you take them anyway?
Well, I certainly hope you enjoy your visit here, Mr. Taylor.
Well, I hope so, too. It's going to last 4 years.
Oh, did you say 4 years?
Yes.
Well, wouldn't you like to come up and sit for a while on the porch?
Thanks. You see, I'll be going to college here.
Well, I'm going to college, too.
Well, I'm pre-med school.
Oh, you're going to be a doctor.
Well, let's just say I'm going to try to be one.
Oh, but that's wonderful. Well, what I mean is...
Oh, this is what you're up to, young lady.
Stay there, Daddy. I'll be right in.
Ah, you don't have to worry, Babs. The landlady ain't anywhere in sight. I looked first.
Daddy, this is...
Well, flowers, huh? Let's have them, honey. Oh, hiya, son. You're new around here, ain't you?
Yes, sir.
Flowers. That aroma has a wonderful odor.
I just moved in today.
Yeah, Babs has got you hooked already, huh?
Please, Daddy, Mr. Taylor was merely...
You know, Babs, I like this one's face. Let's keep him for a couple of weeks.
Father, sometimes you're just impossible.
Well, I was just... Well... What do you suppose brought that on?
Well, glad to have met you, Mr. Riley.
Oh, sure, anytime, sir. Hey, wait a minute.
Yes, sir?
Don't shortcut through there if that old witch sees you shoot.
Good evening, Mr. Riley.
Miss Bogle.
Suppose we have a little talk about the June rent, Mr. Riley.
Yes, sure. I was bringing you these flowers. Miss Bogle.
Flowers?
Yes.
For me? Oh, Mr. Riley. Oh. Yellow chrysanthemum.
Yes, they bring out your complexion, Miss Bogle.
Well, now about the rent.
Oh, but I wouldn't think of having you cancel the rent.
Neither would I. But I guess there's no hurry. Why, these flowers are even nicer than the ones I...
Now, Miss Bogle.
You robber. These are my chrysanthemums. You've stolen my flowers.
Me? No, my daughter. She's the robber. I was only the fence.
You keep your daughter away from my nephew. As for the rent, I'll give you one more week or else.
Yeah, but... Babs, where are you? Babs, don't you try to hide.
I'm not hiding, Father, and I'm not a child, and I won't be embarrassed.
You're embarrassed. How do you think I felt getting caught with them hot flowers? And that boy, the minute I saw him, I knew he was no good.
But I never saw him before in my life. And who says he's no good?
He's the landlady's nephew, and that's no good enough for me. He's a spy from the other side.
You shouldn't yell at her like that, Riley.
No.
Hey, Mom, where's my piggy bank?
Oh, it's on the mantle, Junior. I left it there when I was dusting.
Yeah, you just keep your eye on that bank when Monahan gets here, son.
Sidney is not a thief.
Okay, but if that dough's missing this time, I didn't take it.
Holy cow, will you look at that?
Look at what?
Out in front, a brand new Lincoln convertible. And it's stopping here.
A new Lincoln in front of our house? It must have run out of gas.
Riley, that's Sidney.
Monahan?
Yeah, and the lady's with him.
Gosh, how rich is he?
Put on your coat, Riley. They're coming in.
I tell you, Riley, I just can't figure it out. Peggy married to you all these years and just as gorgeous as ever.
Okay, Monahan, you kissed her once. Now lay off.
Excuse me, honey. Folks, meet the bride. Meet Mrs. Monahan.
Married you? Oh, that's wonderful.
Well, in fact, it's our anniversary, Mrs. Riley. A year ago today.
And that's how come the silver mink, Riley. Set me back $5,000, but what's money if you're happy? Right, Riley?
Right. I guess you're doing okay.
Oh, me? What about you, Riley? I'm proud of you. Your own little home in California? It's a far cry from those four tiny rooms you had in that dump back in Brooklyn.
Yeah, we got 5 tiny rooms now.
Well, glad to see you made good. You know, I bet you got plenty salted away, huh, Riley?
Well, yeah, we got a barrel of herring in the cellar.
Say, what line are you in? Last I heard it was aircraft or something.
Yeah, that's right. I started with Stevenson Aircraft 10 years ago. Just a riveter. And today I'm still... with the firm.
You certainly have 2 fine children, Junior and Babs.
Oh, yeah. Babs is going to college, Mrs. Monahan. And she ain't one of them flighty kids neither, always dancing and swooning.
Take it easy, Daddy.
Well, like I said to her when she started college, Babs, I said, this is a big opportunity you got, so study hard. Don't drink, don't smoke, don't neck, but have plenty of fun.
He's quite the proud father, all right.
Yes, and why not? I got more than most, and I never worry. You show me a man who worries, and I'll show you a man who put out the lights.
What's the matter, Riley? Didn't you pay your bill?
Oh, stop kidding, Monahan. This always happens. That company uses cheap electricity.
It is so dark in here.
Well, sit still, everybody. I'll just light a candle and...
But, Riley, that's the only candle in the house, and the stores are all closed by now. How am I going to serve dinner?
Yeah, call up the electric company, Riley.
Call them? I'll sue them, that's what. If they get away with this, it'll be over my dead body.
I knew this was the right house.
Who's that? Oh, it's you.
Yes, it is I, Digby O'Dell, the friendly undertaker.
Oh, hello, Digger.
I was passing by and I saw a candle burning, so naturally I rushed right in.
But yeah, we were talking and suddenly everything went black.
It can happen to anyone, believe me.
Hey, Monahan, you remember Digger O'Dell from Brooklyn?
Yeah, sure I do. Hiya, O'Dell.
Greetings, Monahan. You're looking fine. Very natural. Visiting, I presume.
Well, as a matter of fact, Adele, wife and I are thinking of making California a permanent home.
I know so many who have done that. Continue, Monahan.
Well, we're just kind of looking over the ground.
I'll be glad to help you if you care to go into it deeper. I dabble in real estate, you see.
Digger, can I see you a minute out on the porch?
Yes, of course. Excuse me all. Well, Riley.
Digger, what am I going to do? I got to give him supper.
Can I help? Is the table laid out?
We got no lights. I couldn't pay the bill. I got to save my face.
Why?
For Peg's sake, she's humiliated. I can't let Monahan know that Peg married a washout.
Eureka, I have it. Take them to a fine restaurant. Splurge on a luxurious dinner.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I'll do. I'll splurge on a... But all I got is $5.
Oh, I'm flat myself, Riley. Or I'd be happy to carry you.
Wait a minute. Junior's piggy bank. Ain't that a fine boy I got, Digger? He's gonna save my life.
In that case, you won't need me. Well, cheerio. I'd better be shoveling off.
So long, Digger. I got a swell idea, folks.
Oh, that's fine.
Let's all go out for supper, huh? Come on, Monahan. I'm taking everybody to Luigi's Grotto.
Well, that sounds all right.
Just a second. Junior, Papa wants to talk to you alone. Place, folks. Luigi's Grotto. May not look like much, but wait till you taste those cheeseburgers.
Well, wait a minute, Riley. That place isn't open.
It ain't open?
There's a sign in the window. Closed by order of the Board of Health.
Oh, well, that's the wrong place. Oh, that's the place I met across the street.
La Parisienne. French food, huh? Well, let's get going.
All right.
Careful crossing the street, folks. Babs, you and Hugh Jr. stay with Monahan.
I will, Mother.
Riley, that restaurant, it looks so expensive.
Well, I'll show that Monahan I ain't no piker.
But I thought all you had was $5.
And $8 in Junior's piggy bank, see? The Monahan's candy's $13.
But what about us?
Us? Well, we ain't hungry. Are we?
No, dear.
Thanks, Peg.
It's a real smart place, Riley. You eat here much?
Well, you know me. Nothing but the best. Let's all sit here in the back where we can where we can face the music. I'll order for everybody, huh?
Riley, these prices. Just look at the menu.
Oysters de la Paris, $3. Lobster francese, $4.
You wish to order, monsieur?
Oh, no, but I guess we gotta. we'll have the complete Chinese dinner.
Chinese? I'm sorry, monsieur. We are French.
Oh, too bad. Well, let's go, huh?
Riley!
Okay. Did you find something you like, Peggy?
Well, I'm on a diet. I'll just have a sandwich. Watercress? Bass, you?
I'll have the same, Mother.
That's $2.
Don't worry, dear. The Monahans couldn't possibly eat $11.
No. You know, I'm not very hungry.
Oh, you're safe.
Yeah.
Just give me a broiled lobster, waiter.
Oh, that's $6 shot.
And one for my wife.
$10. I only have 13.
Yo, a vegetable come with that?
Oui, monsieur.
$10.
And one order of asparagus.
$11.
Yo, make that two.
$12.
And one French pastry.
$12.80.
And that's all.
We still got 20 cents for a tip.
Yo, two cups of coffee.
Bingo!
Well, there they go, Pop. Boy, what a swell car Mr. Monahan's got. I wish we had a...
Shut up, Junior.
What did I say? Oh. Ah, who wants a car?
Sit down, Riley. Let's sit here on the porch, just you and I.
Well, go on, say it, Peg. Go on, say what you're thinking.
What am I thinking?
That you should have married him, Monahan.
Oh, Chester Riley, how can you even think such a thing? Just because things went wrong tonight.
Tonight, things have been going wrong since the day we were married. For 20 years, I've been asleep. But tonight, on the floor of that restaurant, I woke up.
On the floor of the restaurant?
Well, when you all went to the car, I had to bust Junior's piggy bank, didn't I? Well, it woke me up.
Now, don't get excited,
Tonight,
Riley.
I took a good look at myself, and believe me, it was horrible.
Well, I'm satisfied with you just the way you are.
Yeah, well, I'm not. If Monahan can make good, so can I. You'll see. You won't be ashamed of me.
I'm not ashamed of you, darling. Believe me, I'm perfectly happy.
Well, don't worry. I'm going to change all that.
In a few moments, we'll bring you Act Two of The Life of Riley. Who's in the spotlight tonight, Libby?
Someone who certainly belongs there, Mr. Keeley. Joan Crawford. In Warner Brothers, The Damn Don't Cry, she's terrific.
Yes, Joan, as an international glamour queen, looks and acts the part. It's melodrama with a capital M.
With emphasis on the feminine angle. I guess Joan meets as many emotional situations as most women do in a lifetime.
She has a chance to put over some romantic drama, too. David Bryan, her gangster boss, is determined to make her a great lady. And some of her best scenes show Joan's strenuous efforts to oblige.
Well, Joan enjoyed that chance to make us laugh. And the wardrobe she wears, Madame Don't Cry. Feminine fans will sigh over that, Miss Keeley. There's everything from glittering evening gowns to the latest in swimsuits.
Well, she's the girl to wear beautiful clothes. Joan has real style and distinction.
Real beauty, too. She's the cameraman's joy with her finely cut features and fresh, lovely skin.
Now, our producer, Mr. William Keeley.
Act Two of The Life of Riley, starring William Bendix as Riley, Rosemary DeCamp as Peg, Richard Long as Jeff, and Meg Randall as Babs. Chester A. Riley is through being a failure. Come what may, he's determined to be a success. And as part of his campaign, Riley's become chairman of the factory's annual picnic at the beach.
Hiya, Babs. Here, have an oyster.
A what?
Oysters. Pop's over there at the barbecue. He's roasting thousands of them.
Oh, poor Daddy. He's working so hard. For 6 weeks, he hasn't stopped. Overtime every night and now this picnic.
Hey, Mom, you ought to see the swell speedboat down there at the dock.
Speedboat?
And you know whose it is? Bert Stevenson.
Oh, the boss's son.
Hey, Babs, why don't you start going out with Bert Stevenson again? He used to go out with him all the time.
Will you talk about something else? Bert Stevenson bores me.
Well, Jeff Taylor bores me.
Oh, Mother.
She's in love with the landlady's nephew. Jeff Taylor, M.D. Mopey dope.
Mother, may I slap him?
No, dear, you might loosen his braces.
How you doing, Bert?
Well, that's some speedboat.
Norman.
Glad to see me, kid.
Well, what are you doing here?
Looking for you. Don't tell me I'm not welcome here.
Now, listen, my father's around here someplace. If he finds out I'm in a jam...
You're in no jam, but all you gotta do is pay the 23 grand you owe us. Of course, if you don't pay...
But I've told you, I'm broke.
Betting on racehorses is a very expensive hobby. How about that dough your grandfather left you?
It's in a trust fund, you know that. I can't collect until I get married.
When is the wedding?
Quit your kidding, will you, Norman? Who am I going to marry? The will says it's got to be someone my father, okay?
That's your problem, see? And if I was you, I'd start working on it right away. Have fun, kid.
Daddy, is that you?
Who is it? Is it Babsy?
Well, come out of the smoke. Say, that's quite a barbecue there.
Where are you? Oh, hello, Babsy. I'm getting barbecued lungs.
You better take it easy for a while.
No, I can't, Babs. I gotta keep the folks happy. I gotta become the most popular guy on the plant. Besides that,
Boss. Here he comes, Daddy. Oh.
Well, hello there, Riley.
Oh, hello, Mr. Stevenson.
Well, and Barbara. My, what a pretty young lady you've grown into.
Well, thank you.
Now, why doesn't my son, Bert, go around with a girl like you?
Have a hamburger, boss?
Not with my ulcer. You know, Riley, you're a lucky man. You don't have an ulcer.
Oh, I can't afford one, boss. Not on my salary.
Very amusing, Riley. Very amusing.
You see, boss, I... Never said a word about how hard I'm working. What an ungrate.
Hey, Beth, you busy?
Oh, no.
But that's Bert, the boss's son.
I was just wondering if you'd like to take a ride in the speedboat.
Would she?
Why, thank you, Bert. I just love to.
Then why don't you go out with me anymore? Now, you'd think a girl would help her father get ahead at the plant by being nice to the new assistant manager.
Well, if you're suggesting that I date any man on that basis...
Oh, no, I'm sorry, Babs. I guess I shouldn't have said that. Just tell me when I can see you again.
Well, look, it's just that we have such different interests, Bert. You like horse racing and nightclubs and all...
Oh, but I've changed. I've quit all that, Babs. On the level.
Well, that's fine, Bert.
Oh, you don't know me anymore. I've settled down. Why, I've even been thinking of getting married.
Married?
Oh, why not? The sooner the better.
Bert, don't you think we better head back to the boat dock?
Sure, Babs, sure. Anything you say.
That's it, Riley. You just stretch out under the umbrella, dear. You must be worn out.
7 hours I've been frying over that barbecue, Peg.
Hmm.
And for what? That Stevenson don't even know I'm alive.
Why don't you show him your birth certificate?
Oh, hello, Gillis. Where you been?
Enjoying the sunshine, pal, while suckers like you do all the work.
Sucker is right. The big boss don't appreciate nothing.
Look, dear, I've been thinking. If Mr. Stevenson won't come to you, why don't you go to him?
That's a waste of time, Peg. Only one way to get ahead. Pull.
You may be right, Gillis, but we can still hope.
Nah. Nice guys like Riley and me, we're hopeless.
Who's hopeless? I'm going to Stevenson right now. I'm through being pushed around. I'm going to demand a promotion, and I won't take no for an answer.
Good luck, dear.
But, Riley, give me a chance to tell you.
Boss, I've been with you 10 years. I've seen other guys getting raises and promotions, and I never squawked. Now the time has come for me to get promoted.
Riley. Calm down. I am going to promote you.
Excuses. Always excuses. Don't I deserve a break?
Starting January 1st, you're a foreman.
Okay, Mr. Stevenson. If that's your attitude, okay. From now on, I'm foreman? Boss, did you say foreman?
Starting January 1st.
Me? No. Me? No. Oh, thanks, boss, thanks. I'm the happiest. Hey! Peg, you should have seen me there on the beach. I knocked Stevenson for a ghoul. You should have seen me the way I talked him into a promotion.
Oh, it's just wonderful, darling. Only it isn't for quite a while yet, and anything might happen.
Oh, nothing's going to happen. Not this time. I'm on my way to the big dough at last. And... Hey, with all the excitement, I forgot to pay Bogle the rent. Do you think she forgot?
Mother, where's the shampoo? I've looked everywhere. Oh, I'll find it, dear. Meanwhile, you run next door with the rent, will you, Babs? Here's the money for Miss Bogle.
Me? Oh, I'd ra...
Hmm?
Oh, well, all right.
Ah, that's a great girl we got there. You know, Peg, after she's out of college, I'm going to send her to finishing school and really finish her.
Come in.
Good evening.
Oh, hello.
May I see your aunt, please?
Well, I'm sorry, Babs. She's not home.
Oh. Well, my mother sent me over the rent. I hope I'm not disturbing you.
Oh, no. I was just reading and shaving.
Oh, an electric razor. I gave my father one of those for Christmas. He says they're no good.
Oh, well, you've gotten how to use them. Here, see my face?
Yeah. Well, it looks very smooth from here.
Oh, well, feel it. You can tell your father.
Oh. Well, it is smooth. Huh. It's smooth as mine.
Really? Oh, I don't know.
Well, feel it.
Oh. It sure is smooth, all right. Babs.
Yes, Jeff?
You're a very unusual girl.
Oh, lots of girls have smooth cheeks.
Yeah, but what I mean is, well, lately I'm finding it very hard to concentrate on my studies.
Really?
I mean, I've known other girls, but, and they were all right, but I never felt about them the way I feel about you, and I sure is smooth, all right. Babs, would you resent it if...
Why, Jeff, you just kissed me.
Yeah, let's do it again.
I think I'd better go home.
Yes, maybe you'd better.
The rent's paid, Mother, I think.
Oh, thank you, dear. Ask Junior about the shampoo.
Oh, it's all right, Mother. I'm not really hungry.
Over Aunt Martha with the rent money.
Oh, thanks, dear. Well, I bought something while I was downtown.
Oh, it looks like a sign. This house for sale.
Oh, not this house, Jeff. The one next door.
The Riley's house? Oh, but you can't do that.
Oh, I'm sure they'll find another place.
Oh, but you know this city. They'll be out in the street. Aunt Martha, you can't just...
But maybe he'll buy it. Honestly, dear, I need the cash, and I... Oh, well, I guess I better phone and tell Mr. Riley.
Maybe General Manager Peg, and then I'll start buying up stock.
Aren't you moving a little fast, dear?
You ain't seen nothing yet, Dumplin'. We're through living like this. We may even move out of this house any minute now. I'll get it, Dumplin'. Probably Gillis trying to play up to me on account of my promotion. Hello? Now listen to me, baboon face. I ain't gonna... Oh, Miss Bogle. Well, good evening, Miss Bogle. Huh? You what? Sell my house? No. But you... No, you can't. My house. But you... Peg, help!
And that's all there is to it, Jeff. Daddy can't buy the house. Your aunt's asking $1,500 down, and, well, Daddy just can't raise the money. He's tried everywhere.
See, if there was only something I could do, Babs.
Well, it's all right, Jeff. It'll work out somehow. There's just one thing left.
Huh? What do you mean?
Oh, nothing, Jeff. Nothing at all. Well, I guess I'd better go in.
I love you, Babs.
Do you, Jeff? I love you. Goodbye.
Goodbye? Hey, wait a minute. The way you just said that, you don't mean goodbye like that.
Well, I don't know what I mean.
Riley?
Oh, where have you been, dear?
It don't matter, Dumplin'. I didn't get the money. Oh, hello, Digger.
Greetings, Riley.
Guess what, dear? Mr. Odell volunteered to store our furniture till we find a place.
Always glad to give my fellow man a lift. I brought some of my employees along. We'll begin in the bedroom, gentlemen, as usual. I pride myself these are the fastest 6 pallbearers in town.
Don't worry, dear. Something
will... Don't worry, she says. And you. You, my own wife. What are you doing on Sidney Monahan's chest?
What on earth are you talking about?
I just saw Monahan. I went to his hotel. He was in the swimming pool. And there you are, all over his chest.
You mean his tattoo?
Don't deny it. Sidney loves Peggy. I can read.
Riley, Sidney had that tattooed on his chest 20 years ago at Coney Island. I can't help what that big simpleton did. When I married you, you had a mermaid tattooed on your back.
At least I had the decency to put your face on it.
You went to Sidney and you asked him to loan you the $1,500?
Yes, and he said no. He said it would bust up our beautiful friendship. Even when I told him I hated him, he still wouldn't loan it to me.
Step lively, gentlemen.
What's he doing? Put that down. Put down my bedroom carpet.
Now, Riley. Be brave.
Put that down and get out before I throw you out.
Well, man alive, if you'll pardon the expression.
Oh, that skunk Monahan. Oh, how I wish I had his dough.
Never envy anyone. In my profession, we have a saying. The grass is always greener on the other fellow. Well, here you. Come, gentlemen. Come.
I ain't washed up yet, Peg. They think they got me cornered like a rat, but I'm one rat that won't be cornered.
Riley, lie down now. Try to rest.
Nobody's going to throw my family out in the street. I'd rather see you starve. I've got some pride, you know.
Gee, Pop, who's starving?
No, it's you, Junior. The fine father you got.
You're a good father.
You're no judge. After all, you've only had one father. A father is supposed to make his family happy.
We're happy. We're happy.
Well, maybe you're happy, but I'm not. And I'm entitled to a little happiness, too. All I need is $1,500. I got it, Peg. Oh, why didn't I think of this before?
Riley, what are you looking
for? Here in the desk. I seen it here. Peg, I'll kill myself.
Pop!
Where is it?
Riley! No, Junior, do something, will you? Don't let him get that gun.
Gun? I'm not looking for the gun. My insurance policy.
Oh, Riley, oh.
There, you see? In case of death, the company pays $5,000. We're rich. Our troubles are over.
Riley, please, will you listen to me?
Well, everybody's got to die sometime. It'll take us a little while to get used to the idea of me being dead, but after that...
But...
Riley resident. Mr. Riley is dead. Oh, Peg, this is my lucky day. From here on, I'll be in Colville.
Riley, you're hysterical.
I know you love me, Dumple, and I love you, but don't take it so hard. Be happy. This insurance will fix everything.
But they canceled the policy when you missed the last three payments.
I know, and if I hadn't sacrificed to make those payments, where would I be today? Where would I... Peg, where am I?
The insurance policy's worthless, dear.
Peg.
Yes, dear.
Peg.
What is it, darling?
I want to tell you something. Nobody knows this, but I gotta tell somebody.
What, dear?
I'm a failure.
Hello? Who? Oh, yeah, just a minute, please. Pop, it's the plant, Bert Stevenson.
Bert. Peg, I'm fired for taking the day off today. I'm fired.
You better speak to him, Riley.
Yeah. Hello? Bert, well, you can't fire me because I quit. What? New job. $150 a week. Oh, Bert. Bert, I don't know how to thank you. Yes, Bert, yes, tomorrow. I'm promoted. Peg, I'm promoted.
Oh, you're foreman, Pop, already?
Foreman? I'm an executive, $150 a week.
Darling, I just can't believe it. I can't believe it.
No, Peg, don't cry. I can't stand people who cry.
Well, you heard me, Babs. Your father's now coordinator of interplant relations, $150 a week. Happy?
Oh, Bert, I just don't know how I could ever thank you.
Don't try. But how about another date tonight?
Oh. Yes, Bert, of course.
That's fine.
Hiya, Peg. Oh, I didn't know you was tied up.
Oh, it's all right. I'm just leaving.
I'll see you tonight, Babs. Well, I just promoted Riley.
And the dame's grateful, huh? She appreciates what you've done for her, old man.
Now, look here, Norman. My father's out of town, and if he gets sore about this...
Why should he get sore? Not when you tell him he's getting such a high type of respectable daughter-in-law.
But how do I know Babs will marry me?
You still owe us $23,000. You persuade her, chum. You persuade her.
In a few moments, we'll return with Act 3 of The Life of Riley. Of our guest tonight, it can be said, hometown girl makes good. For Ms. Leslie Banning, a native of Hollywood, has just signed a contract with Universal International. Congratulations, Leslie.
Thank you, Mr. Keeley. You know, it's thrilling to be in pictures at last. Now I can look at them with a professional eye and really appreciate a fine acting job. I'm thinking of the picture I've just seen, Winchester 73.
That's an intriguing title. It's really the story of a perfect rifle and the part it plays in a pioneer drama.
With the help of that wonderful rifle, Jimmy Stewart triumphs over the villain, played by Stephen McNally, and goes on to win the girl, Shelley Winters.
Winchester 73 is Shelley's first Western. You know, Jimmy Stewart told me he thinks all actors should make one Western a year. It's good for the morale.
Well, morale is what you have to have, Mr. Keeley. The picture was filmed near Tucson, and, well, Shelley Winters rode horseback day after day in the desert heat and dust.
Thank you, Miss Leslie Banning, for being with us tonight. We pause now for station identification. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The curtain rises on Act 3 of The Life of Riley, starring William Bendix as Riley, Rosemary DeCamp as Peg, Richard Long as Jeff, and Meg Randall as Babs. It's the following evening. Riley has spent a full day at the plant in his new executive capacity, and he's invited two neighbors for dinner, Miss Bogle, the landlady, and Jeff.
And now, folks, now that supper's over, I got a little surprise. About buying this house, Miss Vogel, I believe you said $1,500 down.
Uh-huh. Riley, that money, you robbed a bank.
Never left my desk all day. Except once I had to go to see the boss. He came back from New York unexpected. He said, Riley, my son Bert told me about your promotion and he couldn't have made a wiser choice.
He said what, Pop?
I am quoting the boss verboten. And then he said, Chester, you are practically one of the family. And then he gave me the bonus.
Bonus?
2,000 smackers.
Mom, you're crying.
Nothing. I got the best, kindest, bravest husband there ever was.
Oh, Peg. You're a lucky woman.
Gee, Babs, I guess there's never been a happier family.
Oh, it's like a dream, Jeff. Just look at them in there. I've never seen Mother so happy, and look at Daddy.
Well, he's all set now. His troubles are over.
You know, no parents ever made more sacrifices for their children. I wonder how I can ever pay them back.
How about giving them a present? 3 or 4 grandchildren?
Oh, Jeff.
You will marry me, Babs.
Of course I will.
Oh, it sure is smooth, all right.
We'll be married just as soon as you graduate from medical school.
Well, that's only 6 years. I can hardly wait.
Oh, Babs! Hey, Babs!
Bert!
Say, may I see you a minute?
Why, yes, of course. You better wait here, Jeff.
Yeah, but who is he?
It's Bert Stevenson, the boss's son.
I'm sorry to surprise you like this, Babs, but I had to see you right away.
Well, won't you come in?
Well, I don't want your father to know.
My father?
Well, it's about his promotion. There's liable to be some trouble.
Oh, no.
Now, don't get excited. Let's take a ride someplace where we can talk, huh?
Well, if you think it's necessary.
It's necessary, Babs.
All alone on the porch, Jeff, huh? Where's Babs?
Well, she'll be back in a little while, Mr. Riley.
Left you flat, huh? Well, that's the way it is with love. You two will have plenty of quarrels before you finally split up. Well, come on, kid. Let's get in the house, huh?
Defend yourself, Riley. I was just telling Miss Bogle how you proposed to me.
Oh, yeah. The funny thing, Miss Bogle, Peg almost married Sidney Monahan.
Oh, I did not.
Oh, boy, was I jealous.
Well, you were in love.
Out of my mind. So all of a sudden I said, why wait, Chester? You might lose her. So I rushed into her old man and I said, Mr. Barker, I love your daughter and I want to marry her and you're not going to stop me.
Now, if you want the accurate version of all this...
And then he said, okay, marry her. He was drunk, you see. He didn't know what he was saying.
Oh, Riley.
That
That's why I always say when two people are in love, there's only one way to put a stop to it. Get married.
Mr. Riley, I love Babs and I want to marry her tonight.
Well, I'm sorry, son. She's out for a little... What did you say?
He wants to marry her.
Well, you'll do nothing of the kind. You better go home, Jeff.
Mr. Riley, I love Babs and I want to marry her. All right?
Well, yes. It's all right with me, son. Now, you go back in my room and cool off, huh? We'll talk it over when Babs gets here, huh?
Thank you.
You said all right.
Well, sure.
Chester, I...
Now, Peg.
I'm speechless.
Well, Peg, I was only trying...
I'm speechless.
Peg, the thing
I'm
is...
absolutely speechless.
I know you're speechless, but let me get a word in sideways. I'm using psychology.
What kind of psychology is that?
Well, if I turn him down, he gets sore, see? And Babs gets the idea that I'm trying to run her life. So I say yes to him, and then when Babs gets here, she turns him down. I know Babs.
Is that so? My father tried to use psychology on me, but I married you.
Well, Babs ain't going to make the same stupid mistake you did. Now, calm down, everybody. Just wait till she gets home.
That's the whole story, Babs. You're not angry with me, are you?
Oh, Bert, how could you possibly tell your father we're going to be married?
I had to. That was the only way I could get him to okay your father's promotion.
Oh, if my father loses this job, he'll just never get over it.
Then marry me, Babs. I'll be good to you. I promise.
But I don't love you.
But don't you see it'll solve everything for everybody?
Well, give me a few minutes, Bert. Please let me try to think.
Sure, honey, sure.
Nephew's going to be a doctor, Mr. Riley. I got nothing against his marrying your daughter, but he can't get married until after he starts to practice.
Well, he ain't going to practice on my daughter.
She's here. Babs is here. Oh,
sure.
Mother, Daddy, I...
Yes, dear?
I'm getting married.
Married? She's drunk like your father.
Oh.
Well, I forbid it.
Darling, you can't be serious.
Well, why not? What's wrong with getting married?
You're not getting married. My head's made up.
Daddy, don't shout. He'll hear you. He's right out on the porch.
He's supposed to be in my room. How did he get out on the porch?
Hello, Dad.
Hello, Bert. Where's Jeff? Dad? Dad, me?
I tried to tell you, Daddy, I'm marrying Bert.
Well, aren't you going to congratulate me?
Well, yeah. Sure.
Mother.
Huh?
And Grandma.
No. That's the landlady.
Babs, I thought I heard you, honey. Listen, tell him you want to marry you. Marry me. Your father said it was all right.
Well, I take it back.
What?
She's marrying him, Jeff.
Him? Babs, you don't mean...
Jeff, please try to understand, and we'll always be friends.
I don't want
to
be friends. I want to be married.
Oh, Jeff, wait a minute. Wait for me.
Well, I don't know what that was all about, Mr. Riley,
but... it's okay, Bert. They're going.
Oh, good. Then we can tell you all about our plans. Babs and I are going to be married on Sunday.
Sunday?
Yes, at our place, Mrs. Riley. And after the honeymoon...
I just can't believe it. My little baby going on a honeymoon.
Honeymoon? Well, in that case, I consent to the marriage.
Babs, you look beautiful, darling. Just beautiful.
Well, isn't it almost time to go downstairs, Mother?
No, this time. Babs? No, this time. Babs, now, I promise I wouldn't say this again, but in a few minutes you'll be married and then it'll be too late.
Mother, please, I've told you over and over again, I am happy.
But
now you and Daddy can get some fun out of life, now that he's a successful success, as he calls it.
I just hope it doesn't go to his head.
Where is he, Mother?
Daddy? Oh, he's downstairs, darling, talking to some of Mr. Stevenson's rich friends.
Oh, dear, I hope he doesn't go.
And this is Mrs. Vandermeer, Mr. Riley. Mrs. Vandermeer, the father of the bride.
Oh, charmed. Oh, pardon my glove.
Oh, pardon my bare hands. Would you like to park the body? I'll get you a chair.
Oh, thank you. You interest me, Mr. Riley. Is it true that you're an ordinary workman? One would never tell it by yourself off air.
Oh, well, I didn't have time to buy a new one. I rented it from Big Rodell.
Well, here's a cozy little group. I see you all know my good friend, Mr. Riley.
Yeah, boss. They've been having the pleasure.
Mr. Riley's the most efficient and popular man in my organization. My only regret is I didn't make him an executive years ago.
Well, thank you, Carl. Thank you. You seem warm, Mrs. Vandermeer. Would you like a beer?
Oh, no, thank you.
Riley, isn't that your friend Gillis over there?
Gillis? Oh, yeah, excuse me, boss. Gillis! Gillis! Gillis, you did come. And look who else, Moe and Muley. Well, gee, that's the way you fellows have been giving me the cold shoulder. I thought you wasn't going to show, so I... Well, what's the matter?
He's asking for it, Gillis.
Well, what did I do? Gillis, talk to me.
We're wise to you, Riley. Some foul ball you turn out to be.
Okay, I admit I done it. But what did I do?
You got promoted, didn't you? You're a phony.
So that's it. You're jealous because I made good.
Oh, made good. You traded your own daughter for a big job, Riley. And don't you deny it.
Gillis, you'd think that I would... That my daughter... Oh, no. No, you're kidding. Say you're only kidding.
Look at you. You got guilty written all over your face. G-I-L-T-Y, guilty.
No, wait a minute. So that's what you think of me. Me, your best friend, Gillis.
Mr. Riley, huh? The big executive, huh? Nothing to do but draw your pay. What power have you got? I'll tell you, no power.
I got no power, huh? Well, you'll see whether I got no power, Mr. Gillis. You're fired.
Okay.
And our friendship is finished.
It's canceled.
You and me is all through. Right?
Right. And I'm leaving here. Right after the eat.
No more pals.
No more pals. Enemies.
You hate me, and I hate you.
It's a deal.
Shake.
Not that I care to interrupt, Mr. Riley, but some fellas over there behind a bush trying
Jeff,
to sneak...
That's around... Jeff. Hey, what are you doing here?
I want to see Babs, Mr. Riley.
Well, not that you're not welcome, but you can't see her now. She's getting married in a few minutes.
Listen, you can't. She can't marry him, Mr. Riley. You can't let her.
I know, son. I know. You got a broken heart, but you can paste it up.
But she doesn't love him. Listen, it's got something to do with your promotion. That night on the porch...
I've had enough of this. Everybody saw because a guy gets ahead. Gillis put you up to this.
Who's Gillis? Oh, it's all right, Mr. Riley. I won't make any trouble.
Okay, then.
I just want to see Babs make a fool of herself.
Well, that's better. Now you're talking sense.
Hey, Riley!
Sidney Monahan, my best friend, Sidney, darling!
Hiya, pal. Thanks for the invitation.
Oh, congratulations, Mr. Riley. I hope your daughter will be very happy.
Oh, you bet she will, Mrs. Monahan.
Clever operation, Riley, marrying your kid into all this dough. You're set for life.
Sidney!
You too. You've been talking to Gillis.
Who's Gillis?
My new job's got nothing to do with Babs getting married. Have you got that?
Oh, sure. I get it, pal.
He don't believe it. Nobody believes it.
Oh, don't mind him, Mr. Riley. He's the last one who should talk. Why, he hasn't worked a day since I married him.
But, Babs...
And he's lost all my money with his idiotic scheme.
Oh, Slammy, stop. You know how high strung I am. Stop or I'll kill myself.
When?
You phony. I should have known. And it was all on account of you that I got successful, you double-crosser.
Mr. Bert Stevenson, please. Mr. Bert Stevenson.
Who wants him, son?
I'm from the railroad office. I've got some train tickets for him.
Well, Mr. Stevenson's in the house putting on his trousseau. I'll take it.
If you'll just sign here.
Huh? Oh, yeah, okay. There you are. Thanks. At least no one can say that I'm a phony. I still got my pride. Us Rileys marry for love. My Babs is crazy about Bert. Let's see. Oh, railroad tickets. Mr. Bert Stevenson, bedroom G, car 188. Mrs. Bert Stevenson, bedroom F, car 201. Separate rooms. Oh, that Bert. What a spender. When Peg and me went on our honeymoon, we only had one upper... Oh, what a revolting development this is.
Dear.
Nothing, dumpling, nothing. His Babs all right.
I hope so. I don't know. This whole thing's got me. Riley, Riley, there's the minister. The ceremony's going to start.
Now be brave, dumpling. We all got to go sometime.
Get get Babs. Go in the house now and get Babs. Sure. And Junior, where's Junior?
Oh, I'll find him, Peg. Now, don't you worry, Junior.
Junior!
Junior, don't you know the wedding's ready to start? A fine flower girl you are.
What do you mean, shh?
Come with me.
Come with you? Why?
A very suspicious character just came in the house, Pop. He says, where's Boyd?
You and them radio programs.
No, honest, Pop, he looked like a real criminal. Then he made me show him where Bert's room is. And there it is, right there.
Oh, I'm ashamed of you, Junior. That fellow was probably the best man.
Norman. Get out of this room.
Best man, Pop?
Shut up, Junior. I can't hear.
Take it easy, Bud. I don't like weddings any more than you do. I'm just here in case you're thinking of changing your mind.
Don't worry. I'll marry her. And maybe you'll let me alone.
Junior, get Babs.
Okay, Pop. But what are you going to do? Uh-oh. Here he comes, Pop.
Take Babs downstairs to Jeff.
Okay, Pop.
Could I have a word with you, Bud?
Huh? I ain't much on talking, mister.
Well, I love to chat. Let's
go
in this room.
Get your fingers off me!
Here he comes, Mom. Here comes Pop. Down the aisle.
But where's Babs?
Stop the music! Stop the music! I'm calling off the wedding. Anyone who brought presents can have them back.
Riley! What's the meaning of this? Have you gone crazy?
Oh, I've been crazy, boss. But now I'm myself again. And my little girl ain't marrying nobody she don't love.
You don't make sense. And who is this character? Bloody nose, black eyes?
This? He's Cupid, boss. He was going to collect some horse bets from your son. $23,000.
He what? Bert, come here. Is this true?
Well, look, Dad.
It is true. Your trust fund. No wonder you were in such a hurry to get married.
I found out just in time. This mug here insisted on telling me.
Riley, can you ever forgive me? I didn't know.
It was my own fault. I should have known something was fishy when you promoted me. You ain't that stupid.
Well, I was only
trying. I'm through kidding myself. Trying to be a big shot lost me my friends and almost lost me my Babsy. But I still got my pride left. And I got something that money can't buy. I got a wife who stands by me.
Riley.
And I got a daughter. A daughter who is willing to ruin her life for us. And I got a son who... I got a son who goes around spying on bedrooms, thank heaven. And as for being poor, well, we're used to that.
You're the richest man I know, Riley.
I'm so happy, Riley. I've got my Babsy back. And I'm happy too, Daddy. I got Jeff back.
And I'm the happiest of all.
Oh, you dear.
Hey, you, Riley.
I got Gillis back.
Such is the life of Riley, so wonderfully played by our stars, William Bendix, Rosemary DeCamp, Richard Long, and Meg Randall. Bill, if you don't mind, I'll call you Riley.
Oh, no, that's all right. I'm flattered that a famous director like you thinks I'm really living the part.
Well, it wasn't exactly that. You see, my name being Bill, too, I thought it might be confusing.
A wise guy, huh?
I always thought the life of Riley was supposed to be easy.
Well, so it is. I work at the studios 10 hours a day, mow the lawn every Saturday, take my paycheck home to the little woman. I'm on a diet to keep my figure. What a revolting development.
Life is never like that in Brooklyn.
Well, Dick, I wouldn't want this to get around, but I wasn't born in Brooklyn.
Not from Brooklyn? Oh. What a revolting development this is.
Seriously, Riley, I was intensely shocked to see you at the opening game of the New York, you'll pardon the expression, Giants.
Please. I'm a great admirer of them distinguished gentlemen what play for Brooklyn, but they were in Philly.
Relax, Pop. We're off the air.
That's my daughter, Babs, that said that. Ain't she clever? Huh?
And she's also beautiful, with that lovely Lux complexion.
Well, it certainly is a Lux complexion, Mr. Keeley.
You know, anybody can see that. It's smooth. It sure is smooth.
Riley, we better find out what's going to be playing here next week and get on home.
Yeah.
Next week, a brand new hit from the current screen. The Lady Takes a Sailor. And we'll have the original stars. those fine artists, Jane Wyman and Dennis Morgan. It's wonderful entertainment for everyone, so I know you'll be on hand for this Warner Brothers screen success.
Ah, that's for me and my whole family. Good night.
Good night.
Good night, and long life to Riley.
The Life of Riley to finish out the program for today. That was from May 8 of 1950. Brian is waiting in the wings for the other side, and that comes your way at the very top of the hour. Thanks for hanging with all of us. We will talk to you live from the Dearborn Homecoming on Friday. We'll be out there. Hope to see you out there as well. Our live program begins at 1 o'clock, but you can come before if you want and meet our fearless leader, Susan McGraw. Have yourself a good day. We'll talk to you on Friday. For Big Band Broadway and Beyond, and if not then, Sunday Night Mysteries. See ya.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn, listener-supported, non-commercial radio, featuring local and independent artists.